Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
And welcome to Carolla Classics. Hope you're enjoying your Thanksgiving weekend. This one's for November 30th, 2019. In the show, we're going to highlight the greatest moments of the Adam Carolla Show in clip form. My name's Chris Loxamana, executive producer of the Adam Carolla Show. And with me, as always, superfan Giovanni.
Hey, everybody. Hope you're not snowed in, and I hope you're not enduring horrible windstorms with the power outage in some regions. I think people are being affected by the winter weather already.
Gio's concerned about you guys, and we do hope you're okay and having a great weekend.
It sucks when all you have is a podcast and everything's cold.
Yeah, but luckily, it's this podcast. And we're going to make your weekend better. This first clip that we have ready for you goes back to 2009 and features Adam Scott, not the golfer. We're talking about the actor. You know him from Parks and Rec, Boy Meets World. He actually recently rented Adam's Hollywood house to film the movie Overnight with Jason Schwartzman. So
yeah, the Overnight, they filmed it there. Adam talked about it on air a bunch. It's a podcast clip, so we'll probably play in the future. Adam talks about his movie Torque, which is infamous. It's a kind of a Fast and the Furious clone, but it has a huge cult following. They know him because his wife is their old assistant, Naomi Scott. And she actually came on the morning show in 2006, and she filled in as newsgirl. And she was really great. She was actually a really cool addition to the show. She was temporary, and it was only meant to be a couple episodes. But that's how they have actually a longer relationship with Adam, is through Naomi. Both Adam and Jimmy. And Adam actually came on Loveline, but not until 2005, towards the end of Adam's run. And then he came on the morning show a few times, and now he's making his debut on the podcast.
Let's go back to 2009. Adam Scott on the Adam Carolla Podcast.
No choice but to get it on. I want to welcome to the podcast dear friend Adam Scott. Good to see you, Adam.
You too, man.
Adam, you probably know from... let's see, The Aviator, Six Feet Under, Step Brothers, The Great Buck Howard, which I heard was a really good movie, although I didn't see it. Monster in Law, which I did see, and no, was not a great movie. Also, let's see, what other shows should we talk about with you? You're an actor that people definitely recognize, but may not recognize by name.
Right.
But when people recognize you, they recognize you from Party Down?
A bit. You know, just in the past, like, week, people have started recognizing me from Party Down, which is good because I love Party Down, and it's a good sign that people might actually be watching it because it's on Stars, which is... people don't even know if they have Stars.
You're ironically the biggest star on Stars.
Right, and which is a really bad sign for Stars.
It is... well, I'll tell you a worse sign. My movie, The Hammer... I want to cry. If I start crying, please stop me. First off, this independent film world is so fucked up and so nutty.
Tell me about it.
We, like, a year ago, we're like, when's our movie, me and Kevin Hanschig, I wrote, when is our movie coming out on cable? They're like, oh, it's going to come out on Comedy Central somewhere between April and June of 2009. And this is like April of 2007 or 2008. And we're like, God, really? A whole year? It's going to be a whole year. And then we fast forward to April of 2009, and we go, so when's our movie coming out? And they go, oh, between April and June 2010. Jeez. And we go, really? Because we made the movie about the Beijing Olympics from 06 or 07 or whatever it was. Really? That far away? And they're like, yeah. And then at a certain point, my partner just typed in our movie into TiVo, and it came up. Like, it's on, but...
So who was giving you the information that it would be on in 2010?
These are the guys from the Weinstein Company. Nobody knows anything is the first thing you realize when you come to Hollywood. Nobody really officially knows anything.
And if they do, they're probably not going to tell you all of the truth. They'll probably tell you part of it because they need to protect themselves from something else.
And the one part they tell you, they'll tell you, you can't tell anybody else.
Right.
Like, I'm going to tell people the 1/8 of a story of the shitty, convoluted story you gave me that's mostly bullshit anyway.
Right. But don't tell anyone.
So the movie came out, and it did come out, and it was on, I wasn't on Stars. I think it was like on Cinemax Action or whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah.
But the sad part is, my buddy Kevin Hench says, he basically just backed the Brinks truck up to the satellite dish place and said, give me everything you have, every right. package, every right. porno, every everything. And he doesn't have Cinemax Action. Jesus. So if he doesn't have it, who the fuck does?
What is that? Is that just like HBO? You get HBO and you get like seven HBOs. It's one of the
right.
Cinemaxes.
It's one of those.
Because so, I don't have Cinemax, but I have Stars and I have HBO. But I don't know why I have all of the Stars.
I don't either. You know. And let me Adam, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
So I don't want to interview myself here.
Sure, sure.
Can you tell me, as an actor, how this works? How something like The Tudors works?
Right.
It must cost them millions of dollars to put yeah. on that kind of period production.
Right.
I don't know. The Tudors is on Showtime.
Right.
I don't say,
I'll tell you.
I've never announced, where's my long-winded period piece from right. from the 15-somethings? I'm canceling this.
Are you asking me who the fuck is watching The Tudors?
No, I'm asking you who the fuck is greenlighting millions of dollars to be made on The Tudors when if I was just going across HBO or Cinemax or Showtime and I saw Caddyshack 3, I'd be like, all right, I'm fine.
Yeah.
What won't that do?
Well, the thing about The Tudors, or something like The Tudors, or Showtime, or HBO, or Stars for that matter, since Stars is actually in more homes than Showtime.
Really?
It is. The thing about these channels is that, and I heard this weird statistic, and this is that these companies make all this money because people get Showtime or HBO or Stars, and they don't cancel them unless they move. Because they just forget about it. And until they're like moving their cable system and reassessing what they have, they usually don't bother to cancel it. So whether you're using Stars or any of these channels or not, you're just giving them $12 a month
right.
without even really. So they have so much money. I don't know. I mean, I know that Stars is cool, and it seems like HBO and Showtime. I think it's all kind of the same thing. Like, they all just have... Because think about if you have, say, 30 million subscribers and you're getting $12 a month from each one of them.
You're doing all right.
Yeah.
But I would always be the one, like, someone would come to me and they'd go, I want to do Ben Franklin, the miniseries. And right. I'd be like, fuck it, we're running Billy Jack again. We
sure.
already own that.
We have their $12.
We have their $12. Right. It cost us $4 to run Billy yeah. Jack. And, by the way, for the stoners that are up at 4:30 in the morning, they'd probably like to see Tom Laughlin kick some
sure.
kick some redheaded ass.
I wonder how much it actually does cost to run Billy Jack. It's got to be under 5 cents at this point.
I don't know, but that if anyone wants to know what the 70s was like, just watch Billy Jack. That it was every cliche in the world. And thank God we don't have this anymore. You kids, you young kids that are listening, do not have to put up with the white guy from Iowa who's adapted the American Indian persona.
Oh, God. Billy Jack.
Where's Billy Jack? He's up with the elders talking to the rattlesnakes.
Right,
following the shaman. Like, what? He's whiter than I am. His name is Tom Laughlin.
What a dick.
Everybody's that chief squatting
Even
bear.
Billy Jack is a shitty name. Like, they want something more exotic? They should go for it.
They made 15 movies about Billy Jack. And it was all just redheaded guys from the city who are just beating up the Indians who are up on the hill and raping everyone by the side of the lake. And he was using kung fu and shit back when it was magical.
Remember the love interest for the first one?
Yes.
Like the sorry looking, like dowdy hippie girl that just freaked the shit out of me as a kid.
I know. I watched that movie as a kid and it was like, Billy, your violence is just going to lead to more violence. And then next thing you know, the guy's raping her by the lake. And I'm like 9 years old. And I'm saying to my mom, Mom, you really?
And it's a mom. That was a film your mom wanted you to
Yeah,
watch.
My mom's like, right. You got to learn.
You sit down and watch this.
You don't understand how evil blue-eyed people are. Now, you have to come. Come on. Hello, we're white, Mom.
Right.
Really? We just got done watching Roots. Now I got to be dragged to this
right,
shit?
Right.
I'm going to kill myself. I'm 9. I'm going to fall on an otter pop and kill myself.
Whoever that girl is, she makes Sandra Locke seem like, I don't know,
She makes her seem like...
Like Giselle. Remember Sandra Locke and Sudden
Jenny
Impact?
McCarthy.
Yeah, Jenny McCarthy.
She makes Sandra Locke seem like Jenny McCarthy, right. like a bubbly,
hot.
First off, she seemed like she was 20 years older than Billy.
Mm-hmm.
She seemed like she'd never put on sunblock a day in her life.
Right.
And she was so bummed out. Who raped her, Donnie? You gotta.
It was bikers or something.
No,
it was a rich kid.
No, it was a rich kid from the town.
Of course, the materialistic group of.
He had the Corvette.
Right.
And his name was Bernard.
Yeah, it was a gold 454.
Yeah, she named it, she called him like Bernard, but she would pronounce it different, like Bernard or something. And there was a scene where he actually put stakes down in the ground and lashed her hands to
and just started
raping her by the side of the river. And then she'd be like, Billy.
Billy, don't avenge these.
Your violence is only going to promote
Dolores Taylor. There it is.
More violence. Don't do it, Billy. Yeah. That whole movie was just one huge bummer. And then Billy went.
All in the sunshine.
And I do love it, too. Like, the nice Indian kids came down from the hill, the hippie kids. They just went to the free-range school up on the hill. And by the way, the hill where their school was, when they were up on the school, their school wasn't sitting on a mine shaft that had millions of dollars in oil reserves underneath it.
Right.
The white man just went up there and fucked with them for no good reason.
Right.
And I want to say this as a white guy. We fuck with people for money.
Right.
Not because we're assholes.
Right.
Now, we might be assholes while we're fucking with them for the money, but we don't burn a lot of calories. Like if you're down in the town and the sheriff goes, let's get in the four-wheel drive and go up the hill and go fuck with the Indians, someone's going to go, they don't have any money.
Who gives a shit?
Let's go write some parking tickets and drink some beer.
Right.
But they would go up there and fuck with them the whole time. And then the Indians, and then there's Indians and hippies, they'd come down and go, hey, let's go get some ice cream. And they'd walk into the shop and they'd be like, you know your kind's not welcome here. Like, what year is this?
No, it makes no sense.
It's 1973, really?
But you're right. Like, if they just put the school on top of some valuable piece of land, something, it would have provided just a little bit more entertainment. A
little motivation.
Because I had to sit through that goddamn fucking movie like so four times as a kid.
I hated
it. And my friend's dad, that's why I had to see it. My friend's dad loved it and made us watch it.
Like, even the whole song was, the whole Billy Jack song was the One Tin Soldier. And at the end of the song, it was like, they turned over the rock and on the rock it said, peace on earth was all it said. Even in the song, there wasn't shit under the rock.
Right.
There was nothing. There wasn't anything. It was just one big bummer. It was like, it was that. How old are you, by the way, Adam?
36.
You're a little bit young for Billy Jack, but I'm glad you were forced to watch this movie many times.
I know they had a lot of them. I only saw the first one, but I saw it a bunch of times and hated it.
It was just the biggest bummer you've ever seen
in your
life.
Did you see the other ones?
I saw the trial of Billy Jack.
Ugh.
I saw Billy Jack.
Billy Jack courtroom drama? That sounds fucking
riveting.
Awful.
Billy Jack goes to Washington.
Of course
like,
he does.
Like, literally runs for senator.
Sure.
And guess what? He can't be bought. I don't know if you saw that one coming.
No,
a lot of big oil companies trying to buy Billy.
Couldn't have called that one.
never could have seen that one.
But I bet that he taught them a thing or two.
Something about themselves.
Did he use Kung Fu on the floor of Congress?
I think he did it to filibust or something. But, such a jack-off blowhard fest. The 70s were so full of blowhard white dudes. And like I said, especially the white dude who got really invested in the Native American cause.
Yeah.
That was the number one blowhard on the block.
Well, Jim Morrison, maybe. Yes. We can maybe blame him for that.
He started it. Marlon Brando.
Definitely went there.
Getting Chief Lilliput over there to pick up his Oscar was probably a disaster.
Yeah.
The Indian by the side of the road crying, I think, may have gotten everything kicked off.
Yeah.
We went to this weird thing where we decided, you know what? We fucked with the Indians long enough. Now let's go nuts on them, but only for like 2 years.
Right.
And then we'll toss them back onto the reservation and let them die of diabetes.
Well, it was like the green movement of the past 26 months, of 72 through 76, maybe it was, Mary, it was just lip service and as usual, probably amounted to maybe some awareness, but nothing of any real note.
No, no one
really
did
helping anyone out.
No, I don't know who you grew up around. Now, you grew up in Santa Cruz.
Yeah,
guessing it was a pretty progressive group over there.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much.
And your family did what?
Teachers.
Mm-hmm. So they were kind of down with the cause?
They were, yeah, but they were also... They're also pretty, you know, cynical people, so it's not like they were, you know, they're cool. They're not like, you know, they're, I guess Santa Cruz is kind of hippie-ish, but
we
were never, I mean, maybe a little hippie-ish, I don't know, but it was always kind of a cynical household, which I think kind of... served me well in a lot of ways.
Santa Cruz, California is just logistically amazingly beautiful.
It is. Yeah, yeah.
And is it 2/3 of the way to San Francisco from L.A.?
It's like a 90-minute drive to San Francisco once you're in Santa Cruz, maybe an hour sometimes.
Uh-huh. So it's 3/4 of the way,
yeah,
basically.
It's pretty close.
And would you go into San Francisco a lot?
I never... really did. Like, if I go to San Francisco now, I just don't know my way around at all. Like, I never really got into going up there.
Santa Cruz sounds too sane a place to grow up. Like, you ever do that when you're, like, going on a vacation or a ski trip or something, and you're driving up to the top of, you know, some Mount Bear Mountain or some Mount Pinos or something, and you see a school at the top of it, but it's a public school?
Yeah.
And you're like, who goes to this public school?
Like someone actually drives up and goes here and then lives in this area?
And if they do, how lily white and sane must their life be? Like, do you ever see those? Like, once a year, I go out to Pebble Beach for the big car concourse extravaganza. And there's a high school there that you drive past that's literally, like, on the highway. And it's the
ocean. Where did you say? Pebble Beach. Oh, okay, yeah.
And it's like a high school that looks like it's like overlooking the ocean and the bay, and it's picturesque and it's beautiful. And I think it's almost too nice. Like, isn't your high school supposed to have a little graffiti and one big black kid you're scared of? And not you shouldn't be out surfing before in between classes or at lunch.
Yeah, I guess Santa Cruz is a little idyllic. I didn't really realize that till I came here. Like, coming to... I moved to Pasadena when I was 18, right after high school, and I remember, like, flying in. It was when I came to, like, audition for this acting school with my dad, flying in and looking down over just the miles and miles of shit coming into L.A., just, like, just horrible. Just, I mean, from an airplane, it's all smoggy, and it looks terrible.
And it just looks like you're flying over a bunch of gray mouse traps. The sticky traps.
It does.
Just a bunch of boxes. And then every once in a while, there's a clearing. Or a pool. And you go, I wonder what high school that is. And then you fly over it. And then you fly over Hollywood Park.
Yeah.
And then you land. But you think, Jesus, it is shitty.
Yeah, what the fuck is this place?
Well, the thing about flying into L.A., and, you know, maybe it's intentional. Some of it's got to do with, you know, the poor people and everyone's flying over them. But the flight into L.A., you fly over the shittiest part of L.A.
Yeah.
It's not like you go, oh, there's where O.J. lived.
Right.
And, there's Aaron Spelling's house.
But if you did fly over those spots, they would be so small that you would barely notice them.
Right.
Because the nice areas of town are not vast like the shitty areas.
Yeah.
Like, it's just miles of, like... of, like, warehouses and...
You're flying over, like, East L.A. and Compton and, like, City of Industry and Duarte and...
It just goes on forever.
Yeah, you've just... It's all the shittiest parts. And,
right.
And maybe... I like it, by the way, which is... Yeah. Don't get too comfortable, people. It's not all the Rose Parade.
Yeah.
So they fly over there. Now, you're going to go to the Pasadena...
Yeah, I went to this... the American Academy of Dramatic Arts when I was 18. But... anyway, so moving to Pasadena was I kind of realized right away that Santa Cruz was kind of this amazing, kind of unique
place.
Made
you appreciate it?
Yeah. I mean, I was glad to leave just because it's such a small place and I was ready to kind of, you know, move to a city. But it's very different. I mean, a lot of like pot and I really got to smoke pot, because everybody kind of smokes pot.
In Santa Cruz,
yeah. So I think, like, by the time I was midway through high school, everyone I knew was a complete stoner.
Yeah.
You know? It's kind of like, I don't know, was it like that here?
In
the valley?
Well, the way it was.
Probably. It was, right?
Well, you're talking to two.
Dying.
I was a jock, and so I didn't really smoke. I mean, what happened?
Were you really?
Yeah. What happened with me is,
oh, football, right?
Yeah, I played football and baseball, but mainly football. But I smoked pot like a little, like I did the experimental high school, yeah. Junior high. Like, do you think, are you high? I think I'm high.
Yeah, yeah,
do you think you're high?
Sure.
I think we're high. Are you high? There was that. My mom had a pot plant in her backyard. I showed my friend Hamid, and it was gone the next day, by the way.
So he just stole it?
There was just a hole there where it got pulled out of its root. I'm guessing it was my old buddy Hamid, who I think's in jail now.
For doing that to someone else?
I'm sure much worse to many more. But, yeah, he was a troublemaker. So I smoked pot early, and then later on I sort of became a jock, and then I was like, oh, I guess jocks don't get high.
Sure.
I was just pretty much in the weight room and playing football and all that stuff. Right, I wasn't a dicky jock. I wasn't judgmental. But then later on, when I got out of high school, Donnie, I'd say me and you, when we were living in our apartment in North Hollywood, that was probably my pottiest phase.
Yeah, I'd say.
Oh, wait, were you guys talking about this place the other day with someone on the podcast? It was hilarious.
We had a one bedroom apartment in North Hollywood.
Yeah, it sounds fucking disgusting.
It is. Donnie and I were the first guys to move out. So there's a couple things that happen. When you're the first guy in your group to get a car, then guess who's driving?
Oh yeah, sucks.
And when you're the first guy in your group to get an apartment, guess who's going to be fucking in your living room?
Right.
Every single guy who has a girlfriend and doesn't have his own pad.
Right.
So our
I could never believe that girls would do that stuff. Like when I was in my early 20s, could you believe that girls would actually do that? Like they would go and have sex with someone in the living room while the place was filled with other dudes. Like,
well,
girls would actually do that stuff.
Yeah, well, we kept the low profile. Donnie and my head would come around the hall like it was really like it was really out of a cartoon. Donnie's, you know, about 3 foot off the ground, me about 4 foot off the ground, and it would come around because we'd hear our third roommate getting it on. God knows what he'd drag in on any given Saturday
that's
night.
Awesome.
But our apartment became the official pot smoking and girlfriend banging headquarters for the Valley because we were the first guys.
It was like 7-Eleven. It was like open 7 days a week, 24 hours a day.
People would just swing by with chicks
any day
and pot
any night. They'd all be sleeping and people would just come.
There'd also be
amazing.
There was a couple of things. There'd be we were living with our buddy Chris who got laid.
Well, that's
non-stop.
The action really
and
started.
So you'd hear. You'd literally, it'd be Saturday night at 4:30 in the morning, and you just hear somebody going down Laurel Canyon, Chris, I love you! And then peel
really?
Out. Oh, yeah. All the time. There'd be that person. Then there'd be our jackass friends who would, Donnie had a bong that was 4 foot tall, and the base was an inch and a half wide. Like, this notion that you're going to take this cane and fill it with bong water and put it on the super nappy carpet and have everyone get baked out of their minds and drunk out of minds, and this thing that's as thin as a cane will never fall over,
never get broken.
Bongs should be wider than they are tall. Not well, it's a foot for every centimeter the base is.
Right.
It should be the other way around.
Right. Did you make it yourself, Donnie? Was it?
No, it was a regular head shop kind of bong. But,
but how many times did it get knocked over?
The defense of everybody else, it was Dan who knocked the damn thing over repeatedly.
Did it shatter ever?
No, it would just spill bong water over the...
Right in the middle of the living room, and it would reek of just...
But wait, why are bongs... Why do people want bongs to be a giant thing in the room? It doesn't get you more high.
But when you're
bigger.
21, though.
I know, but still, even when I was 21, I was like, you can take that down a little bit. You don't need...
Well, first off, who wants something you need to hide from the cops or your stepdad to be the size of a Winnebago?
Right, you can't shove that up your ass.
Yeah, you want something you can palm or keister, no problem. No.
Right,
throw in a cabinet or something.
Geez, yeah, let me get a hand truck and a cherry picker and a flatbed so we can move the...
Right.
My stepdad's coming.
Right, it's not going to fit into the closet. It's actually too big.
Who wants that?
No.
So I don't understand.
I did back then.
No, my buddy Doug had a bong that he made out of PVC pipe that was like the Ricola.
Doug Benson?
No, yeah. Although we'll talk. I'm sure he had one that was bigger. This guy had one that looked like it was from the Ricola commercial. Like the guy's like right. blowing it up, like right. out the Matterhorn. Like right. it literally, it was a two-manner. Like it was like, right. hey, I'm going to man the business end of the bong. Right. Doug, can you hear me? I can't see you.
Right.
Go down to that end of the bong and light the bong.
That is fucking ridiculous.
This bong, yeah, so we had a bong that would get knocked over yeah. all the time.
And
the,
that bong water stinks. It's
there's
terrible...
no, it is, it's right up there with cat piss. As a matter of fact, if a cat would piss in a bong,
yeah.
that would be the most pungent. Like if you're making, you're looking for things that you can't get out of a carpet
yeah.
that soak into the padding yeah. underneath it.
Yeah.
Cat piss and bong water yeah. are the
and you could burn some hair and let the smoke seep into the carpet as well.
Right.
I wonder what was worse for Jim the landlord, either us spilling the bong and the rabbits and the cats and everything, or the indoor waterfall before yeah. we moved in.
Well, a guy did have an indoor waterfall that was
that
in
was
there.
Already in there.
Yeah, it
yeah.
ran across the living
horrible.
Room.
Yeah, but he changed the carpet when we moved in.
Because of the waterfall.
And I remember giving him the speech of, listen, we're just hardworking young guys
yeah, yeah,
here.
Yeah, yeah. Sure.
You know, my motto is early to bed, early yeah. to rise.
And you probably believed it
I
when
probably
you were
did.
Telling him that.
I did not
bullshit.
Know what it was going to turn into.
yeah.
And at a certain point, Donnie just said, fuck it, I'm going home. Like, Donnie couldn't take the debauchery.
Really? You actually moved out, kind of? You just went to your parents' house?
You couldn't sleep. You couldn't, like, if you tried to set goals for yourself
there's
for the
no
week,
way.
No way. You'd get sidetracked yeah. every single time.
I think what sent Donnie over the edge is when we had a whole bunch of, like, bootleg Quaaludes and our friend, like, OD'd on them. And Donnie grabbed the sack of Quaaludes, and he said, I'm flushing them down the toilet. And I tackled him. Like, I blocked him from the bathroom. Like, Donnie, some of us still want to get high responsibly. we're not all on a suicide mission here. And then Donnie ran outside and started burying them in the lawn.
Burying Quaaludes
no,
in the lawn.
I started jumping and stepping on him and
crushing
him. And
did
Adam
your friend,
was freaking out.
Did your friend die from
no.
OD?
No, but he was high for a week.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm not lying. He was high for a week.
I've never had a Quaalude. What's a Quaalude do? Does it just make you... Is it what the girl and Billy Jack took before scenes?
It's like drinking a six-pack but not feeling drunk and...
That
sounds really fun.
Think if a guy
was.
Think of like NyQuil.
Yeah.
But if a really badass chemist from the Bay Area came up with it, like a heavyweight,
okay.
you know
all
what
right.
I mean? Like,
all right,
I'm going to make NyQuil but times 20, you all know? Right. And these weren't even real Quaaludes. They were like bootleg, fake
like
knockoffs,
shitty
like shitty knock. I don't even know what was
like maybe even over the counter a little bit.
Who even knew? I didn't even know what was in these things. All
right.
I knew
like,
is
bootleg biker Quaaludes or something.
It was like Donnie's throwing away perfectly.
That sounds very untrustworthy.
We didn't give a shit. But I was like, Donnie, you're not going to throw away perfectly good drugs on my watch.
Yeah. Well,
and
yeah.
I did.
So I was probably, the my pottiest phase was probably living in that apartment. Right, Donnie?
Yeah. After that, you slowed down with the weed.
And I never, yeah. I quickly.
Occasionally hit here or there.
I quickly learned that pot slowed things down too much.
Yeah.
And since my life was miserable.
Yeah.
Like, here was my life. I was either working construction with yeah. a bunch of racist assholes or yeah. Mexicans or whoever. Yeah. And a bunch of idiots.
Yeah.
And I didn't want that slowed down. Or I was sitting in my apartment with no air conditioning in North Hollywood sweltering. You know, eating yeah. top ramen and kicking fat chicks out that my friends have been banging.
Yeah.
So I didn't want anything to slow down.
Well, and not only does it slow it down, but it makes you sit and analyze what's happening around you. At least that's
right.
what it does to me. And if I was, you know, for the first, you know, 7 years I was out here, if I was just sitting in my apartment not working with no air conditioning, if I got stoned, all I would do is sit there and think about how horrible this is,
right.
and it would make everything way worse.
Support for the Adam Carolla Show comes from Manscaped, the best in men's below-the-belt grooming, precision-engineered tools for the family jewels. Someone is going to unwrap a package this year. Why don't you give them a little present, something they can use, and they can use it in the shower as well. So a thing we were just talking about, you know, have to
Yes.
I was going to say, I shave my head every 2 days. Every couple of weeks, I use the Manscaped. I told everyone, the fellas, use it on the armpits. The deodorant's got to hit the skin, man. Don't get caught up in the hair there.
Smart. Great gift package. They have the perfect 2.0. It comes with the lawnmower 2.0, electric trimmer, waterproof in the shower, skin-safe technology, won't nick or snags. We don't need that.
Never once got a nick.
Never a nick for Bald Brian. Hey, you want to get 20% off and free shipping? Use the code Adam at manscaped.com. Hit it, elves. Your balls and your partner will thank you. It is Manscaped, right, Dawson?
Get 20% off and free shipping with the code Adam at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com. And use code Adam. Clean up your nuts and make Santa proud this year.
And that was Adam Scott back in 2009. A little less than a year later, January 2010. Gio, I'm kind of confused because I wasn't around when this happened, but Jim Carolla hosted the Adam Carolla Show?
Yeah, it's really weird. It's like, is this like a test pilot for Life Lessons with Jim Carolla? Not really. It's the Adam Carolla Show. And Donnie does the intro and explains that Jim will be hosting. And this is a little chunk of what he was up to. It's kind of a pilot of Life Lessons because it's kind of the same stuff he talked about and the stuff he's interested in. Much like Adam always talks about, he really enjoys his interests.
So here we go. Adam Carolla's dad, Jim Carolla, hosting the Adam Carolla Show.
Hello, everybody. It's Donnie. Today, we have a very special Carolla podcast in store for you. This will be the first in a series of self-development lectures. We hope that you find or discover something new about yourself in these series of lectures. And without further ado, today's podcast.
My name is Jim Carolla. I'm Adam Carolla's father, one distinction. And tonight I'd like to, you heard the introduction. I'm a funny combination of being Adam Carolla's father, number one, in that order. Number two, I'm a psychotherapist in private practice in Sherman Oaks. I'm about to retire. I'm 79, going on 80. So I'm really glad for this opportunity to, I do a little lecturing around, so I'm glad for this opportunity to speak to maybe a larger group. So tonight I'm going to talk about the search for the stranger inside us, what I'm more calling a permanent self, And the differentiation between what psychology calls a false self and a more authentic self, or that permanent self. So we'll start this search at the foundational level, self-development. So I want to start with just taking the lower part of that, the neonatal area, birth, infancy, maybe up to toddlerhood, and not the technical way, just to try to understand that from this foundation, there are seeds that are planted that in adult development, these seeds begin to really show themselves. So I want to go right to the foundation before we move on to other things in this talk. So the neonatal. So this is a part, this is the fetus, and a good analogy for the neonatal is that it's like if you live in an apartment house where you have an above apartment and below the apartment, and all the emanations and radiations that come down from the upper go into the lower, those impressions, that's the same thing with the fetus. What's coming up in the upper floor, with the mom mostly and dad and family, is now being vibrated to the fetus, particularly mother and her attentions or whatever the emotional stuff is going on between father and mother. And anyway, all that's coming down in layers of what I'm calling the neonatal fetus development. And according to how that's going and how that material is, there's a certain kind of intrauterine bonding is going on. That's the first bonding. So that's a very important time, the bonding at that level before touch and gaze and emotive part comes. This is just by vibration, and if it's difficult at that time, then layers of impressions are laid down into what I'm going to be calling like an encoding of the fetus before it's even born. The next level is birth, and this is a lot is written in psychology about birth. Birth is a time when time where the water bag breaks, and a new world begins. It happens right at this birth time, and one of the main points at the birth line I would like to make is that this is the first prolonged emotional and physical shock the child undergoes. This is the child's first introduction to that kind of physical and emotional shock. So it becomes like almost a model later on of at least the seeds planted for the model of how we will handle shocks and traumas surrounding the birth. So, and according to how that goes, if it's pretty rough, then that could be the beginning of a lifetime careers of overeating, smoking, alcoholism, and any form of splitting and addiction. So the education and the tool into the world of self, one is involved with the bodies of others. First, the doctor and all that situation that goes on at the birth room. Seeds are being planted there. Either way, for good or bad. I mean, for stability or less stability. And then the baby now comes into a second kind of bonding, which is gesture, gaze, and touch. And this is this bonding here, particularly if the first bonding is how that went, but anyway, this bonding is kind of the crucible for self-formation. We're right now coming to the real, coming right down to the real important part. Thus, a split opens up a real, if a split occurs here between the harmony, the baby's needs, the mother is out of harmony for the baby's needs, then a kind of split occurs, a fault, sometimes called in psychology a basic fault. And this split and this fault kind of like produces a hole that for the rest of our lives we're trying to fill that hole. So it's a very important time. We call it the crucible for what self-formation could be. So the themes in this journey, the interweaving of the disciplines I told you about, I think I have. Anyway, clinical psychology, developmental psychology, neurobiology, and a kind of I call a spiritual wisdom traditions of different kinds of traditions. And to reach this permanent self, we must contact the group of selves that have replaced it. In other words, when things go wrong in this level, kind of structures begin to form, and those structures affect other structures that are coming up and developing. So if there's depression and sadness, or if there's disassociation or anxiety or fear, kind of structures build around them, and then as we go up and developing, those structures meet other structures and influence them. So, selves begin now. We must gradually decrease those selves, meaning kinds of habits and tendencies, and different kinds of addictions may form under that. Powerful habits can come from that. And to reach what they are covering up. So first we need to begin to see them more clearly, and I'll make this more clear as we go along.
And that was Jim Carolla, who's currently right now enjoying the new trumpet Adam just bought him. Now, this next clip, this features Megan Dom. Now, she was recently on the Adam and Dr. Drew show and on the Dr. Drew podcast. But who is she, Gene?
She was a writer for the LA Times at the time of doing this, and she wrote a super flattering profile on Adam back in the radio show days. And she was into like home renovation. That was one of her major interests. And she actually has a new book out. I think she's written some previous books about home renovation. And she's talking to Adam one-on-one about her efforts to remodel homes and renovate them in the Valley. And Adam is super into the topic. It's just a chunk of the episode. It's a really fun conversation between Adam and a lady who likes Adam.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get it on. Mandate, get it on. Welcome to the podcast, Megan Dom. Megan is an author. She has a book out called Life Would Be Perfect If I Lived in That House. I'm guilty of that. It's basically a book about real estate addiction, an obsessive fascination that we have with houses, bigger, better, and all that. But I guess, well, maybe we should explain our history. Megan?
This is like the highlight of my life. I don't want to embarrass you, but I'm so excited to be here.
Megan, by the way, is quite accomplished, so it should really be all my pleasure. Degrees from Vassar and Columbia, those both sound real impressive to me. Written for GQ, the New Yorker, Harper's Village Voice, Vogue, and magazines like that. I think I first became aware of Megan when she wrote some op-ed piece about me in the LA Times some time ago.
Yeah, I think that was almost 3 years ago.
Definitely the best best review / I don't even know what it was, bio that I've ever had written about me in my entire life. And then Megan, now I'll screw this up, but you sort of presided over a speaking series at the Skirball Center that you invited me to speak at?
Well, I did the column about you. I write a column in the LA Times every mm-hmm. week. And just some background, the reason, you know, most opinion pieces often come from anger, and I was very angry about something that had happened on your show.
I don't want to dwell on it.
I was really, you know, I had been a huge fan. I'm probably your biggest fan. I mean,
really?
I know you've got a lot of. I don't want to frighten you.
I don't mind it.
And I have the column here. I'm happy to read it out loud, really slowly, at any time. So just stop me.
You brought the column.
Of course. I committed it to memory. I know you've committed it to memory.
Well, we'll hear some of that column. Now, I haven't heard it in a while, but I was tickled pink when I did read it. But then it sort of ended on a negative note.
Oh, no. You can get it as a ringtone now, actually. You might want to do that.
Really?
Yeah,
I should.
It's a really long
and then ring. And then Megan brought me out, I guess, to the Skirball Center.
Yeah.
is...
I don't know, where Bill Cosby's kid got shot, and they do other things in the neighborhood, too, but that's all I really know
it's
about Skirball Center.
It's a cultural center. You know, they do major cultural, they have exhibitions and things. So, no, the way that happened is I had written this column about you, and I am not affiliated with the Skirball Center, but I often would put together programs for a lecture series here in L.A. called Zocalo Public Square. And I convinced them to let me interview you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was broadcast on public radio, and we had about 800 people. But you know what was so funny about that night is they always ask, because it's a nonprofit organization, they make a little pitch before we go on, and they ask people for donations. And they made $40 that night because out of 800 people. So that that was your clientele,
cheap,
you know?
Cheap
yeah,
fan
I mean,
base.
Normally we would have about 100 people show up and they make, you know, a couple
so
hundred
normally
bucks.
You'd have, percentage-wise, you'd have a lot less people there, but you'd make a lot more
money.
Yeah,
the yield wasn't great.
Well, they sold a lot of wine because I'll tell you afterward, there were a lot of people drinking wine and talking to me, so they must have at least sold that wine.
It was a
or
great
maybe that
event.
Was comp.
It was great, and I was really, and Lynette said that she had tears in her eyes. The thought of you being on National Public Radio, I think.
Yeah, you know, you've arrived.
So,
yeah. Well, so, we'll get into the column, but let's talk about the book. For now.
Okay.
What inspired you to write the book?
Well, as you said, I'm addicted to real estate. I'm one of these people that cannot start my day without looking at the real estate sites online, without looking at Redfin to see what's for sale, what things cost. Even if I'm not looking for a house, I do this behavior. I go to open houses on the weekends, even if I'm not looking for a house. If I am looking for a house, then it's just a complete mania. Like, I can't get my work done. It really feels... I'm a houseaholic. It feels like an addiction.
I'm that way, too.
I think you are. And I know I've heard you talk about it. And I know you talk more about it from a kind of renovation contracting point of view. And for me, it's like looking at pictures. It's like porn.
Yeah.
And the way it started, I bought a house in 2004 by myself in L.A. It was right as the bubble was building up. And mm-hmm. I guess it would burst in about 2007, right around the time I interviewed you, probably. Or wrote that column. I was on my own. I was single. I was self-employed. I was a very, you know, I had a life of a great deal of independence. And for some reason, I had just become consumed with buying a house. I wanted to buy a house more than I wanted to go on a date. I wanted to own a house before I kind of got a boyfriend. I was just done. I had moved around a lot in my 30s. And I just wanted a house so badly, so I was consumed with looking for the house, and it was the time when you would walk into a house and there would be 20 people bidding on it, and you had to make an offer within 5 minutes. It was like speed dating. Buying a house was
not
like
only
speed
that,
dating.
But if the house was listed, this is out here in Southern California, if you can imagine, before the whole bubble burst, 04, 05, if the house was listed for $760,000, if you didn't offer them $780,000 or $800,000, it was an insult. So normally, you list your price, you list your house for $760,000, you get a couple offers at $615,000, a couple offers at $660,000, but you don't get offers for $810,000.
Yeah, no, nothing
so
was the real price.
So you had to offer more than the listing price if you wanted to be in the game.
Oh, and I mean, teardowns were going for $1 million. In not great neighborhoods. I'm not talking about Bel Air. I'm talking about Mount
just all
Washington,
the houses in the
Echo
Valley
Park.
And stuff that
right.
I grew up in.
Right.
Yeah.
I went into a house with a friend of mine, and we were both looking for houses at the same time. And our entire relationship was based on this. We could be on the phone talking about interest rates and mortgage brokers for literally 4 hours without stopping.
If you have that bug, it's powerful. I recently, and I'm a little bit of an addict, too, because I guess you define addiction, at least Dr. Drew does, because I've talked to Dr. Drew about it before, not as it pertained to houses, but just addiction. Because people that drink that don't have a problem with booze.
I liked to drink while I looked at the pictures of the houses, though.
People do a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
And he said, do you continue in the face of adverse conditions and situations, meaning is your wife telling you she's going to leave you, is your boss saying he's going to fire you, and you keep doing it?
Right.
And I guess this would fall under that heading because I'm jobless, essentially, and I don't have any income, and I don't have any money. And I found out that Madonna's old house was going up for sale up on the top of Beechwood, Lake Hollywood area.
Are you talking about right now?
Yeah,
you have no money now?
I don't have an. I don't have. I barely have enough to keep my shit together.
I'm so excited to be here. I'm going to pay you.
I don't have $7.9 million for Madonna's house.
Okay.
And Donnie's mom, my realtor, said, "Oh, do you know Madonna's old house up for sale?" And she said, "Do you want to check it out?" And I'm like, "Hell yeah! I mean, I've seen that house a million times, you know, from afar."
Right.
And I went into the place, pulling up a picture of it now, and, you know, built 1929, Bugsy Siegel lived there, blah, 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 just jaw-dropping views. And I was like, this is, you know, it's on like 3 acres. I was like, this is premier real estate. Like, this is insane. And I knew somebody was going to get it for somewhere in the sixes, which is insane. Because
the $6 million.
$6 million.
Yeah, we're not talking sixes. My sixes are different
right.
from the sixes.
Someone's gonna get it. Right. I thought someone would get this thing for 6.8, 6.9, and I was convinced that when the dust settled and everything got back to normal, that you'd be looking at a $15 million property. Because it was like it's one of the most premier properties in LA. And so there I was walking through Madonna's old house with the who I assume is the gay realtor. Just because, unless otherwise stated,
now, and just had she had Madonna had to like clear out for you? Was were they like
no?
Madonna
somebody's
coming over right now.
Madonna
you
cleared
out
10 years earlier, okay. But you could see where she'd done her closets one way and done the kitchen the
but
other
her
way.
Stuff was not in there.
No, I didn't trip over Lourdes or anything like that, and or as Larry King would call her Lords. But I was walking around and literally. Jobless with really no income to speak of, and you know, not great times financially, and a pretty big nut to take care of, and kids that are going into preschool that cost a bunch of money and shit like that. And I was just walking around the house going, how can I get $7 million?
Mm-hmm.
Who can I get to get involved with this? I'm gonna make a couple of phone calls. Maybe Kimmel wants in on this thing. Like, I'm gonna, and it was like, it's insane. Like, I at that point. A lease on a new Jetta would have been considered a bold financial move for me. And I was like, I could get some guys to get a small consortium
of
people.
Yeah, it's like, it's a drug. What can I do to get this
now?
Get
hold
of
that.
It's a complete focus.
Yeah, yeah, I was thankfully able to let it go. But it was like I started thinking down the road, and what if my NBC pilot gets picked up?
Right.
Then I can
You're bargaining.
Yeah, what addicts do.
Yep.
Stall them for about 3 months, find out about the pickup. Like, the pickup gets, I probably get cleared for a loan if that show gets picked up. And it was like, and I was like, are you insane? This is wildly expensive. You don't have any money. And if your show does get picked up, maybe it gets picked up for 12 episodes and then it gets canceled. Then you have an $8 million house.
So what was the plan? Were you going to live there, or was it going to be like a vacation house?
This is the part where it really turns into an addiction. I didn't even want to live there.
Right.
Because it's impractical and it's way too big. And I thought, maybe if I got it, and I rented it out, I could get half the mortgage back, but
what
then it would
the
be
rent
mine.
Be on that?
Oh, the mortgage would be like, you know, $35,000 a month, and you could hope to rent it out for, I don't know, 18 or 20.
And then
what
do you advertise on Craigslist or something? Where
yeah,
you
like, hey, struggling students.
Yeah.
Is there 275 of you want to all chip in $1,000 a month?
Dogs considered, woof.
Yeah, like, yeah. I didn't, but that's the whole point. Did not have a plan.
Right.
That's where it really kicked in. So you bought your house in 04.
I bought my house in 04, and it was one of those things where I had a certain amount of money. Look, I'm a freelance writer.
Right.
I'm not your ideal mortgage person. If it had not been 2004, it's entirely possible I would not have been even considered for a mortgage. I had some cash because I had written a novel, and it was like I came out to LA. It was optioned for a movie that, of course, went nowhere. But I had made some money doing that, and I had been hired to write the script, and I had some liquidity. But it was a set amount. I only had a certain amount. It wasn't like mm-hmm. I had a salary where I was going to keep making money. Right. And so I had a kind of finite amount of money, but the real estate market was just going up and up and up and up. So I had a clock. It was like I was going to be priced out of the market within weeks, I was convinced.
Yeah, stuff. You'd see houses that sold for $350K that a year, 4 years right. earlier, and now a year and a half ago there were $550, and you just saw it going to the market for $910.
Yeah.
And you're doing this math, which is this will be $3 million in the next 8 weeks versus right. the math you should have been doing, which is this is going to pop and drop.
Yeah, well, yeah. Within, I'll get back to the house in a second, but I was in the house the first day, and there was a really ugly window shade on the front door. It was like a glass French door, and a friend of mine said, well, why don't you just take it down, you just rip that off, and the house is probably worth 10 grand more now. That right. was literally what we were talking about, a bad doormat, take right. it away, it could really it
There's
could increase
grand.
The value. Yeah, so anyway, I had a certain amount of money. And we're not talking about fancy neighborhoods in L.A. I live on the East Side, what some people refer to as the East Side, not what real East L.A. people call
right.
the East Side. But I live in, the Silver Lake area.
And that was Megan Dom, writer from the L.A. Times, back in 2010.
Hanging out with on Adam Carolla Show 318.
That's right. All right, before we get to this next clip, I want to remind everybody, Reno! Yeah, Reno, I'm talking to you, or anybody in the surrounding area, or anybody who wants to go to Reno. Adam is going to be doing an Adam Carolla's Unprepared for the Holidays live show at Virginia Street Brewhouse. I guess you say this Saturday, even though today's Saturday. I don't know. I better ask my goggles. But it's December 7th, Saturday, December 7th. Get your tickets now. This next clip features one of my favorite guests. I love her, Kristen Schaal. Most recently in The Last Man on Earth. She's the voice of Trixie in Toy Story. And she was
in everything.
Yeah, she's in everything. And she was on the podcast in 2010.
Yeah, Taylor Morgan's filling in on the news. This is after Teresa's departure, which was kind of sudden due to her schedule changes and various other issues. Brian Bishop's also in the studio. Adam Carolla Show 406 from September 2010. This is the entire interview with Kristen Schaal.
Kristen Schaal, how are you?
Good
to see you, sweetie.
Me too. Nice to meet you.
Have we met? We haven't met, have we?
Yeah.
This is brand new for us. I feel like we've been around for a little while. We should have crossed the paths by now.
Yeah, well, I'm a hermit.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
Oh, me too.
That's probably why we haven't met.
Damn, but it's so sad because we'd be perfect.
I know. We have great charisma already.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, we do.
It's getting warm in here.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it doesn't take much.
Yeah.
You may be co-writing the next book.
Mm. Oh, yeah, let's talk about the sexy book of sexy sex. It's available now on Amazon.com, and you co-authored it with fellow Daily Show writer Rich Blomquist. Must be nice to, let's see. Jon Stewart didn't come out here this year, did he, for the Emmys, did he?
Did he not make it?
I don't think he was here. We have the same agent.
Oh, mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, my gosh. He's working hard for you.
Whoa. Yeah, yeah. By the way, when I always know John calls because I get the baby, my wife's calling. I got to call you back. You know, you can always kind of tell where you're at.
You're like, yeah, your wife calls a lot.
Because there's people on the roster that are above me and then people on the roster that are below me. And when someone above you calls, then you could kick down one.
Yeah. Who else is above you? That's got to be it.
Well, everyone on the roster. No, he's got Jimmy Kimmel. He's got Johnny Stamos. No, I was just kidding. Just made that one up.
Who is this guy? Who's your agent?
James Baby Doll Dixon.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
He's still around.
He's a huge fan of mine. I said to him one day, I said about 6 months ago, my wife said to me, there's two great moves. This is how you know your agent's a major, major league fan. He said, we're doing Bald Brian's benefit to raise money for his brain tumor about a year ago. And we booked out a hall that had about 1,200 seats in it. I think we were charging $100 a ticket or something like that.
Oh, we had the temerity to charge $100 and $300 for premium seats.
Right. And when we sold it out, he said, baby, how? And I said, people like the podcast. Yeah, but
But how did you sell that out?
Oh, we were told not to even bother booking the place.
He told me not to bother doing it. And then about 2 months later, when my wife said to me, you know what you should do? You should do a syndicated daytime show. You and Dr. Drew. That would be a kick-ass daytime show. People would dig that. So I said, you know what? That's a good idea. So I called James Babydoll Dixon, and I said, hey, Babydoll, my wife had a novel idea about me and Drew, a little telepic daytime syndicated stuff. Baby, baby, baby. They only go with names. Wow. Stop it already. I can't stand all the hot air blowing up my ass. I'm going to get too big for the room.
Jeez, it would only be your, what, fourth show?
Only go with names. Oh,
God.
So let's get back to you, Kristen.
Okay.
What do you think about me and Baby Doll's relationship? Sorry.
I don't know. Maybe you should just get like a little known agent so you could be the big fish.
Yeah.
You know? Mm. Why do you need this guy?
Yeah.
What's he doing for you?
I should get the guy who Woody Allen played in Broadway, Danny Rose.
Sure, sure. I hear he's become an agent now. He was an actor.
Yeah, would be awesome because the guy had like bird acts and a juggler that had one arm and something like that. Oh, you're Trixie in Toy Story 3?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you got a voice made for that. Yeah. Also, Fly to the Conchords, by the way. So how'd you get on The Daily Show? How did that begin?
Thanks, Brian.
How does that process happen?
Oh, it's difficult. I kind of got in through the back door. I think you have to get into everything through the back door.
Yeah,
there's no front door.
That's right.
Let's hear that.
Wow.
Anything you say here is going to sound dirty because your book is...
That sounds awesome.
Sexy sex.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now, okay, so your boyfriend with whom you co-wrote the book, he's a writer on the show. Were you already together or was it like a scandalous on-set romance?
Oh, we were already together.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I did some stand-up. It was when Hillary Clinton was running for the nomination and she was losing terribly and I did a stand-up bit about how we weren't going to see another female president for a couple hundred years. Mm. And then it got written up and pitched at The Daily Show and I got on it. But I'm just a freelancer. So,
oh, at the Daily Show.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, don't say just. I mean, you're the senior women's correspondent.
And your boyfriend is the staff writer.
Yeah, he's working there now.
So he probably, how long's he been there?
7 years.
So he probably has a mantle filled with Emmys? Or how does that work?
He's got 5 Emmys and we're going to make a coffee table out of them.
Really?
Yeah, why not?
You mean literally like legs of a coffee table?
Yeah, we'll be the Emmys.
Wow, that's so obnoxious.
I don't know. It's either that or melt them down.
Yeah.
Give them to sell them.
Do you leave one like in the guest bathroom because you know people are going to like stand in the mirror and practice their acceptance speech?
That would be...
Then you put a camera behind the mirror, see?
Yeah.
That's where the hidden camera comes in handy.
Yeah, you should do one of those things where you... put the photo booth in the entry hall there, and then you have the thing there, but chained down like a bank pen, you know, and everyone holds it up and takes a picture with it. Because that's the 5th Emmy. You only need the 4 legs, you
that's
know, for
true.
The table.
That's true, yeah. I think he gave the 5th one to his mom and dad.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Aww.
That's nice.
That's sweet.
Yeah. And it should be... heading for more of these things, too, I guess. I mean, it seems like Stewart wins one, like, at least every other year.
They're on a consecutive streak. They've actually set a new record. It was them and Survivor won 7 years in a row. And this year, they have now won 8 years in a row. And
the Riders.
Survivor lost. Oh, the Riders. The Riders, it sort of goes back and forth between Colbert.
Right.
Yeah.
Which Stewart produces anyway, so it's a win, what you call win-win. Unbelievable. By the way, Kristen's doing a book signing that is Friday, September 17th, 7 p.m. at Book Soup in L.A. Where is that?
It's down on Sunset, Book Soup.
Oh, yeah?
The world famous.
Stay away from shit that has the word book in it.
There are also bars nearby, so I thought you might have spotted it from across the street.
Wow.
I'm currently reading my my book in the audio form that's being recorded. It is fucking it is backbreaking. It's horrible. It's a horrible job.
How many takes do you have to do?
I'm a horrible reader. I can't even read my own thoughts correctly. And it's, you know, 300 pages. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's like the worst homework assignment I've ever had in my life.
That's dry throat syndrome right there.
Oh, you just sit. You know what I was thinking about? I'm sitting in this recording studio in North Hollywood, just reading your book, doing a couple of riffs, just skipping through a few chapters, giving a couple more riffs. But it's a huge pile of shit to get through. And I'm a horrible reader, and I didn't think I'd need to read. I didn't think I'd write a book or do anything like that. And then you have two strangers sitting on the other side of the glass from you, and you start digging in to some of your policies, and you're like, listen, my lefty friend, tell your pole-smoking significant other that I don't need his ponytail. And you see the guy who's doing the engineering, and he has a ponytail, and it looks like he's gay, and you're like, you're yelling into the mic, and you're thinking, there's no way that guy agrees with any of the shit that's coming out of my mouth. And then the other one's a chick. And I got a whole chapter on why chicks should, you know, 70 cents an hour to our dollars, way too much, and all that kind of stuff. And I'm just looking at her the whole time while I'm saying my horrible sexist thoughts. And I thought, what must it have been like for Mackenzie Phillips? Was she sitting there? And like, wow. Then my dad took my hand.
Yeah. Well, I think they brought a photo of her dad and put it on the other side.
Oh, really? For motivation?
For emotion. Yeah.
I swear to God, I'd have to hang up a fucking comforter on that glass. I mean, I'd be like Jim Morrison in there or something. Like, I couldn't imagine just staring. By the way, what if you were the poor engineer and the poor chick who was producing it? You just stand there. It's like, then my dad entered me.
Oh,
you know what I mean? Like, whoop,
whoop. Was that in there? Is that a quote?
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's out of my book. But
he hasn't read it, you understand?
No, but I saw the woman on Oprah. I mean, the woman, she's on Oprah talking about banging her dad as an adult, right?
It was consensual.
I know.
Oh, yeah.
You know, David Cross did his book on tape, and he had me come in and read a section.
Oh,
of it.
Really?
And then he had.
Hey, what are you doing tomorrow?
Yeah, right.
You got to get.
I don't mind reading other people's stuff.
You don't? Are you a good reader?
Yeah, I can read. I learned how to read.
You want to do, you know, chapter small?
Maybe.
Oh.
Yes.
I'm no David Cross. I've read between
she
the lines.
She only
Where's
reads
your Emmys? I usually don't dip under guys with four Emmys. I might make an exception.
But yeah, I'm just saying, yeah, you could get me to read it, Taylor, Brian. And then they had
I don't want them.
Oh. We had Yola Tango come in and sort of interpret one of the chapters.
Who?
Yola Tango, they're a band. He just sort of got away with stuff.
But
what I'm saying is be creative with it.
It's too late.
I'm already
160 pages into my nasally drone. But if you want to do a chapter,
yeah,
you know, it's right here in town. You know, we're flexible.
I have an entertaining lilt. I could move some audiobooks of yours.
Well, I think you're misunderstanding. You have to sound like me.
Oh, I have to sound like you. Okay.
It's my book. I mean, I'm just saying I want to rest, but I think you're a talented enough performer that you could probably pull it off.
Okay, I'll mimic you.
All right, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear that. Should
you think I'm fucking kidding
now?
Around, but I am not.
No, I can tell because I see it in your eyes.
I'm
You're
so
giving me the
looking,
crazy eye.
I'm ready to fucking throw myself down a flight of stairs just to terminate this pregnancy. I really am.
Now, are you going to do an audio version of the sexy book of sexy sex?
I don't think so. It's too visual.
You want me to do it? Oh.
Yeah, I'd love that.
I'll do your book. Yeah, there's so many pictures and illustrations and captions and whatnot.
Yeah, whatnot.
I don't know how it would work. But on the other hand, I don't know how anything works.
Adam reading the page about fisting, though, I think would be very entertaining.
That's art.
Yeah. And by the
way,
I love the fact that that's a pop-up section in the book. Makes it a good toilet read. Yeah. Is it now on the back? Is that you and your man?
Yeah.
That's Rich?
Yeah, that's Rich Blomquist.
He's nice looking.
Thank you. Yeah, I thought he was gay at first.
He seems gay.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, well, that's... you know, a well-coiffed man with a bunch of Emmys, of course he seems gay, right? Yeah.
That's actually a good quality in a guy at first.
Yeah.
As long
Thinking
as you
he's
prove
gay.
That it's not true.
Yeah.
Just that he has enough of a little bit of a.
Yeah, he takes care
side.
Of himself.
Yeah. No, look.
A little grooming. That's a, you know, good
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, he's got that clear nail polish on. And
you can go get petties together.
All the plants in his apartment are alive, and he hates his mom. Sure. That's all a plus at the beginning.
Can I tell you one of my favorite things in the book is your porno name generator?
Oh, thanks.
So now, you know the old formula. Mm-hmm. Bald Brian, do you know what the old formula was? It was like your childhood pet and then the name of the street you lived on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I heard it was your middle name and the street you grew up on, but there's variations.
Okay, yeah. So hers is, it's your favorite beverage and your biggest insecurity.
Yeah.
Oh.
So like...
Fresca Herpes?
There it is.
Wow, that's a horrible poor name. You don't think it's a good poor name?
Fresca Herpes.
Yoo-hoo, small pants.
Mine is
sounds like you're reading Paige.
Bailey's on the Rocks failure.
Oh.
That's not getting me any
good. You don't drink Bailey's on the
Rocks. Yeah, mine
sometimes, don't judge me.
Chardonnay Mathematics. That's mine.
Well, that's good. So it was like the street one because I grew up on a street called Houston Street, except for my pet's name was Norman.
Norman Houston.
Yeah.
Norman Houston. It's good.
Yeah. I also, my second cat was named Kitty, though, so that's pretty strong. Kitty yeah. Houston is a pretty
Kitty
strong.
Kitty Houston's good.
That's a strong poor name right there.
Yeah.
Hey, you're working with Kitty Houston.
Again.
Awesome. Yeah.
She can't stop working.
Woman has no refractory period. Yeah, sweet.
Mine would be a Buster Service Ramp. So, unfortunate.
You grew up in the back of a Target?
Yeah, yeah. It's a tough childhood, but we're here now.
So the book, how many pages is this thing?
Oh, like 500.
It's a lot, and they're all hilarious.
Thank you.
But can I tell you, I was when I first got here, I was reading portions of it just because I was, you know, laughing like a loon and reading portions of it to some of the interns that were hanging out. And then other people walked in and thought I was just randomly talking about masturbating.
Oh, like, really?
They didn't
they just,
get that
they
I
just
was
taught
actually,
you mid.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And actually, when I went to buy the book today,
yeah,
you went and bought it
today.
Well,
thank you.
I did.
Thank you.
I would like to ask you to sign it and Adam to reimburse it.
Yeah.
Technically, it's
we
a
can certainly write that off.
Show expense.
You can at least write that off.
But when I bought the book, I remembered I was bringing Adam a gift, and so I grabbed the weirdest gift bag I could find, which happened to be a Tinkerbell gift bag. So I went up to the counter with the sexy book of sexy sex and a Tinkerbell gift bag.
Yeah, aww. That's range.
That didn't look
and the
right.
Gift she bought me should be renamed the Tinkerbell. Because it's like a bell you piss into.
There you go.
Essentially. I mean, it is...
Really?
Yeah. Where is there. It?
Like when you're camping?
Yeah, it's like, well, here's the point. RV, boat, plane, use it anywhere.
I just love the symbol on the front of the box because it looks like the restroom symbols, except they're all like holding their knees together.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, and ladies can use it too?
Yes.
Yeah.
I might
around.
Have to use one now. How long is the show?
Yeah. Well, we'll do a little more news, and then we'll set you free. Would you like to pull out your news and do a little?
News already?
And now, the rest of the news with Taylor Morgan.
Now, really time to shine.
Kristen, do not be shy about jumping in. It's sort of a loose form here.
Really, really news, yeah. Though? I was looking forward to asking her about the taint. I mean, okay. Mm. Well, we can switch
the
gears.
The taint is old news, I guess.
Yeah, yesterday's.
Okay, things you may or may not be interested in no particular order. George Michael sentenced to 8 weeks in jail after pleading guilty to driving under the influence of drugs.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah.
Is it a curse? I mean, you know, we always have this conversation about, like, doing what we do versus, you know, publishing. Like, you come up with some fucking songs. You come up with a little catalog of songs, and you're rich, and your kids are rich, adopted in this case, I'm sure. But everyone is rich for the fucking rest of your life. I mean, if you create a catalog, I mean, movies and TV commercials, it's like this nuclear isotope that just never stops glowing and can power a battleship for 100 years. Like, it just, it never stops. And we're all in the fucking business of, like, telling jokes, and then they float up into the ether, and then we have to think of new jokes, yeah. And you get paid $10 for the one joke you told, but if you want another $10, you have to think of another one.
Yeah.
These fucking things just keep, they're just a cow that keeps giving, and they transcend all these cultures. It's like Michael Jackson was, I'm sure, just as big in Japan as he was in Houston, Dallas, or L.A., you know?
At least,
right? So you have the entire world as your sort of shopping cart, and then they just constantly buy your product. Michael Jackson's going to make $50 million a year for the rest of someone else's life.
Yeah.
Rest of Blanket's life.
Well, I hear what you're saying, Adam, and I think
thank you. That's good improv. That, yes, Anne.
I was also thinking about how wealthy people are also really good at regenerating more money, and people like Paris Hilton and Kim Kardashian have their own fragrances.
Right.
And what gives them the right to make perfume? Like, do wealthy people have, like, great olfactory sensories?
Well, we smell better than others.
I think it's just that wealthy people know how to make money out of nothing.
Sure.
Which is exactly
what... Well, it's really straightforward. Someone comes up to Kim Kardashian and goes, we'll give you $1.75 for one of these bottles we sell with your shit in it and your name on it.
Yeah.
And if they're really involved at some point, someone brings them a couple of sampler platters to sniff, and they sniff a couple of swatches of something on their way to the airport, and that's the end of that. Then they get their name on that, then they get the name on a workout cassette, and it just keeps going and going.
It's like making a song, isn't it?
I would argue that, creating a joke or sketch or bit or doing whatever it is we do takes about as long, especially when you hear these motherfuckers, like, they're going, oh, when I came up with Satisfaction, we're just on the bus coming home from the club or whatever, and I just came up, and they always fucking rub it in your face where they go, oh, I came up, I want to hold your hand in 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And you fucking made, it's generated $200 billion over the years. So I think the curse of George Michael is he doesn't have to work again. There is a thing that keeps you sort of sane and moving and keeps your joints lubricated when it's like, hey, man, you got to answer the bell. You got to pick up the phone. You got to hit the road. You got to keep moving. He's forever rich, and now he's getting into trouble. Just kind of hanging out, getting drunk, sucking a little dick at the beach. You know what I mean? Just hanging out. Doing what boys do. You know what I mean?
That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
And some
it's
girls.
Sort of the equivalent of winning the lottery. It's why everything always goes south for those guys. Give a guy, just all your work every day is going out to the mailbox and pulling huge royalty checks out of it.
Well, you don't think he has more songs in him? I mean, do you think musicians just stop after they are rich?
Yeah, some do, some don't. It's hard. Some kind of go, fuck it, I don't need to. I mean, when you remove that sort of financial imperative, especially... Let me just say this about George Michael. The song's horrible. It's like a...
He wrote it when he was 17.
Guilty Feet Have Got No Rhythm?
I'm 17. What?
It sounds like he was a zygote when he fucking, like, his mom just rammed a Sharpie up her pussy and he penned it then. The song is like Catch It Rolled in AIDS Jimmy's.
That is not easy
to do. It's fucking horrible. It's a horrifically shitty song. So maybe he doesn't have any songs in him. He didn't have this one in him. This song is horrific.
He had a good run there, dude, in the late 80s.
Yeah, his songs all blow and they don't hold up. Well,
it's not even just a matter of his creativity at this point, though. It's like, how marketable is he? Because now he's sort of become more of a tabloid fixture. Like, he's bit of a punchline now.
And so much of it was based on him putting the collar up on his BSA jacket and putting his shades on and having a bunch of chicks go, ooh, he's dreamy.
You're now you have so to jealous.
Picture a cock in his mouth. It's all weird now. Microphone turns into a cock when he's holding it up. It's all weird. It's all ruined now.
Now, doesn't every microphone turn into a cock if you look long enough? Oh, was that out loud? Sorry. So, also the big story in the news, the natural gas pipeline that exploded up in the Bay Area. Mm-hmm. The news just kind of keeps getting worse because now they're saying, first of all, there's this whole network of natural gas pipes throughout the whole country.
Sure.
They're pretty old. That pipeline was 54 years old, and its lifespan is supposed to be 50. So somebody at some point should have been checking on it. But in any case, they're saying that more than half of them, something like 60-some percent, are made of steel, which corrodes much more easily than they would like. It's no longer the industry standard, but they've kind of left everything there that is in place. And most of them are also never inspected by the top-of-the-line technology that we have. They have these little robots that they call smart pigs.
Yeah, they call them pigs, and they send them up the line.
Yeah.
Looking for that steel truffle.
Yeah.
True story, by the way, about that explosion.
Mm-hmm.
I was born in San Bruno. Much of my family still lives there. That was, I emailed Katie a picture. I don't know if she can pull it up in time, but my uncle, that was his neighborhood. That was like his block where it blew up. Mm-hmm. He had to flee for his life, basically. Well, what happened was he was sitting with my aunt in his front room. A piece of debris came crashing through the roof, and they ran for their lives. They ran to their car. The handles on the door were too hot to open the car. They had to use their sleeves and stuff, and they drove the wrong way at first towards the flames, realized it couldn't go anymore that way, then drove down the other direction.
So it was just a huge fireball.
They initially thought it was a plane crash.
Oh. Whoa.
It was initially reported as a plane crash.
Oh, it was initially.
And
it makes
sense.
That,
I don't know if we can get that picture up or put it on the website, but his house, it's crazy. It's one of literally, you'll see, two on the block left standing.
Wow.
It's crazy shit.
It's weird to flee in these modern times, you know what I mean? I thought fleeing was something that sort of left
peasants
somewhere around
do.
The... Yeah.
Yeah, when the czar's being grumpy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Taxman, Sheriff of Nottingham's coming around.
Flee!
That's it right there.
He's pointing at the house.
He's... So he's right. He's only two houses away from total devastation.
Wow.
I mean,
what would Tamu say about that if he heard about the plane? That is amazing.
Well, he's lucky.
Does he have a good house?
Yeah. I mean, it's right in back of it where the trees are, it's a canyon. It dips down. So mm-hmm. that whole thing was on fire.
Mm-hmm.
And except it's really unreal. I don't exaggerate very much. It's really unreal that it survived. As you can see,
every other house. Yeah, I mean, we're looking at 20-some-odd houses that are burnt down to the foundation.
Wow.
I guess that house was meant for something great.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of pressure on that house. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
A lot of pressure next time your uncle gets a blowjob in that house. A lot of pressure.
Have they been able to move back home?
I don't think they've moved back home. They've been allowed to go back to the home, you know what mm-hmm. I'm saying, to, get their things. Or
now,
whatever.
Do you flee back to your house, or that'd be more of a, more of a
crawl
trot?
Back, yeah.
I see, yeah. You usually flee away from things. Yeah, you never flee towards trouble.
Mm-hmm. I'm fleeing towards you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, Kasia Kerr, the new judge next season on American Idol, Jennifer Lopez.
Oh.
Wow.
$12 million.
What is she bringing to the table?
Coca-Cola for sure.
And it's possible that Steven Tyler might be a judge as well.
What does she bring to the table?
Steven Tyler?
That's a chick, right? I've seen the front chick for Aerosmith, right? With the scarves and
yeah,
the hot ass?
With the big
Where's the sort of underoos up
the
there?
Yeah.
Yeah, unitard.
You'd be a cute couple. You two.
Yeah.
He keeps hurting himself, doesn't he? Like falling off the stage?
He does, constantly, yeah.
So maybe he just
keeps having
needs
to cancel
put.
His tour. Yeah, he needs to sit in one spot and just make $12 million.
Someone really needs to sit down with Steven and go, walk this way, Steven, not the way you've been walking. You keep falling off the edge of the fucking stage. Yeah. Well, it's hard when, you know, your mind is still rocking, but you have a prosthetic knee and a, you know, hip replacement, and it's like, you know, getting going on it. You know what it is? It's equivalent to all those home videos where Uncle Lou's going to hit the dance floor, but he's 66 years old, and he's had a couple of highballs, and now he's going to get down to twist and shout, and he always ends up eating shit, right? That's what happens.
That's Steven Tyler.
Yeah, he's doing the moves.
Oh, God.
Yeah, we're watching him fall off stage.
See,
yeah.
You just cannot embarrass yourself in this day and age of YouTube.
If he was singing Walk This Way, I've just, again, that would be the greatest thing ever. All
that
right.
would be perfect.
Yeah, especially if he's hitting this. Walk This Way.
Shut Up and Dance is a close second.
Oh, okay.
I would take Shut Up and Dance, too.
All right.
That's good.
Yeah.
So, let's see. There's a few stories I started and didn't bother with because I knew you wouldn't care.
Spit them out.
Primary elections in seven states today.
Ew.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
The FDA just approved a new drug for gout.
Wow.
That is a good Tears for Fears song.
7 weeks till we vote on whether or not to legalize pot.
Oh, God. Wow. Yeah.
I like the way you say pot.
Pat. Yeah.
Smoking the pot.
Look. Hold on a second. For the love of Christ, how many times are we going to talk about this fucking pot and the back and the forth? Don't you feel like we've wasted the better part of our adult lives? Should we legalize it? Shut the fuck up and legalize it so we can move on with our lives?
For Christ's sake.
Legalize the pot for already. We can get back to fleeing to our homes.
What's it hurting anyway?
Yeah. Listen, the potheads are the potheads. They're going to continue to smoke the pot cigarettes. And then there's people like you and me. We smoke real cigarettes like Americans. But either way, I say give the pot to the potheads. Let them all have some kind of naked hippie party where they worship the sun for the love of Christ.
I was loaded out of my mind.
Yeah.
I was loaded.
You know, it doesn't smoke pot, Tom Brady.
Pat.
Yeah. You sound like my Aunt Pat from Philly.
I don't know where that came from. I have, you know, kind of weird little accents that come through from time to time because mm-hmm. I lived in North Carolina and St. Thomas and Puerto Rico
wow.
and like all these random places. So.
You guys ever have this happen where you sort of grow up with people, around people, maybe not your parents, but just some aunts, uncles or something like that. And, you know, they sort of have their vibe and their way, but you're just a kid and you never really question it. And they're always just that older aunt or uncle. But then at a certain point, you become an adult. And you start eating, you know, Thanksgiving with them. And then you realize it's sort of one adult to another now. It's no longer the kid and the aunt or the uncle or the child. It's just like that. And you start seeing them as sort of the people that they are, not
yeah.
just Aunt Pat. You know what I mean? Like
they fall off the pedestal.
Yeah, well, yeah. Even if you didn't worship them, you start just seeing sort of their foibles or like they're like, wow. And my Aunt Pat is wildly negative. And it's funny. As a kid, it's just always like, I won't get hurt playing Pop Warner football. I won't crash on this BMX bike. But then as an adult, especially when you get a couple of glasses of Pinot in you, and, you know, she's starting with the...
Wow, Pinot. Fancy family.
Thank you. I bring my own. You start going, I don't know, Ed. You rent that house in the Holly, you could get some bikers or some gypsies could move in there. I know, but for $5,000 a month, the chick paid up front. Yeah, who knows? She's probably shooting one of those porno movies. At a certain point, you go, hey, shut up. I don't want to hear you, Aunt Bummer. Like I
said that to her?
I didn't yell it at her, but I was like, hey, Pat, stop trying to talk me out of something I already did that's worked out nicely
for
me.
Oh, so you talked like an adult
yeah,
to her.
Like how about a little, that's a good idea. Why are we going down this road?
You I don't know if I believe that he talked like an adult. I think he's just trying to impress you.
No. My whole thing is I'm on a tour to tell you know that My Name is Earl show?
Yeah.
Where he goes around and tries to repair all the damage he's done? I try to go around and tell everyone to fuck off.
You're on yeah. the alienation
yeah.
tour.
My name That's is a long Fuck list. Off. It's me, my new show on NBC.
That is a good show.
My name is Fuck You. And I go, just like, you know, the carbon copy or the yin to his yang, I go to all my old jobs, find the managers, find all the old girlfriends that thumb me and go, fuck off.
You get your revenge.
I get
That's
my revenge.
That's a great idea for a show.
Huh? You like that?
I do like that.
You and your and boyfriend with all the Emmys couldn't have come up with that.
No, we could not. Not even with 10.
Yeah, he's probably weighted down carrying all those Emmys around the apartment. He couldn't think
yeah,
of a good idea.
Yeah, he's very strong.
Walking from room to room with this pile of Emmys. Having to kick one out ahead of him because he could only
kick. Because Emmys in the way. I need to take a piss.
Yeah. I hope he falls in the pool and drowns with his Emmys.
Adam.
I don't care.
Oh, wow. What he's did I my, do to you?
He's on my list. My new show. He's
fuck
in the pilot. I'm going to tell him to fuck off in the pilot.
You could use that song, too, that Fuck You song. I
yeah.
love that song.
Who wrote?
I just got on to it.
Who's that? Up with People?
No, yeah, Charles C.C. Riley.
I'm gonna write. I'm gonna write that down. All
I
right.
I don't know the song.
Fuck you. Fuck you. You guys know that song?
Get that drop.
Oh man.
It's always.
It's a hit.
It's always funny.
You know, it's a hit.
It's funny when you do the song, and then you realize halfway into singing it that you're not registering with the person. Like when you go, you know that song. Hot-Blooded, and the person goes like, I don't know that song, and you go, you know, Hot-Blooded, and am I foreigner? And they go, no, I don't know that song, and you go, well, you know, I'm Hot-Blooded, check it and see, I'm Hot-Blooded, I'm hot, and then at a certain point you realize, oh yeah, I'm just saying what I just said, but I'm now sort of yelling it at them, and...
and they don't know where to look?
Yeah, if we didn't know the fuck-off...
Where do you make eye contact?
If we didn't know the fuck-off song... Then you're going, fuck off. It's not going to. Or I go, oh, yeah. No, that fuck off song. I think about the Ricky Martin fuck off song. That fuck off.
Oh, no.
Sing along the fuck off song for us.
It's fuck you. It's like, fuck you. Fuck you. You guys know
this
song.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
now
we know. Now I know.
We like your unplugged version, though.
Oh.
Oh. Fuck, guilty fucks have got no rhythm. All right. We got to wrap this up.
And that was Kristen Schaal in studio back in 2010, hanging out with fill-in news girl Taylor Morgan and Brian, and of course Adam Kroll. Now, this next clip, oh man, I remember this day. So, in 2010, Ed Asner and his son Matt came in, and it's one of the most infamous interviews ever done on the Kroll Show, because Ed just, he went a little off script and off the rails.
This interview is often cited, especially during Allison's run on the show, but she wasn't present for the interview. It is fill-in news girl Cher Lazar who's trying out the time for the job, and it's unclear if Allison ever actually heard this or any of the future news girls have heard this episode when Adam references how bizarre this actually was. Brian knows, Adam knows, you know, and we know. It's unclear if other people know. And this is from November of 2010, Adam Carolla Show 442. Conspiracies, 9/11 truth, with Ed Asner, and a Stitcher bonus that many people probably never heard because you had to have Stitcher when nobody had it, and now we have attached to this episode.
Enjoy.
I knew Joe Francis because Joe, I did this thing once. I was doing Loveline. I would come home late at night. I would see these late night infomercials. And there used to be one that I found to be despicable, which was, you know, people are sort of outraged and have their panties in a bunch over, you know, Joe Francis and what he's doing. And he's sort of using these women and without their consent, but they give consent, but they're drunk and they're at South Padre Island and blah, blah, blah. Okay, titties, fine, but nobody dies. It's titties and a little embarrassment. But there was an entire series that were people being cleaned out, literally being killed. It was a commercial. It wasn't Faces of Death, but it was one of these.
It was like,
you know,
Banned from TV.
Banned from TV. Like, it was a whole series of, and they'd cut it. You'd see, there was a famous one, I don't know where it was, I think it was maybe in Europe or something, where somebody was going to, it was this guy, he was like going to cross train tracks at a sort of busy area. And then at the last second, the guy stopped because he saw a bullet train essentially coming. But the woman who was next to him did not stop and was just eviscerated by this bullet train. Now, they would cut it just before that. And it was planes crashing and alligators eating people. Oh, just,
yeah. He produced
live
this?
Live footage.
That's good.
He was going to SC when he was doing this, and I used to see these commercials, Banned from Television, Part 2, Uncensored, whatever, and I used to be outraged by them because I thought the family of this woman who was cleaned out by the commuter train, this woman left behind a couple of kids and a husband, and there's no, hey, in 10 minutes we're going to be showing this commercial. It was just, you'd turn on, you would literally, it'd go, well, you know, they'd go, we'll be right back after this break, and it'd go right to the woman on the tracks. And I thought, why should these people's families have to? I mean, you'd be scared to turn on the TV set. Yeah, imagine if you were, you know, the woman looked like she was 40. Imagine if you were her 18-year-old son. You'd be scared shitless. And I was like, what kind of human garbage would do
compile
something,
the best of those moments,
and then sell them for, not to mention, you want to talk about, you know, when the FBI gets their list together of possible Al-Qaeda sympathizers, how about a list of the douchebags who put down their credit card to see a bunch of people eaten by fucking grizzly bears?
Did he do Bum Fight?
No, I don't think that was him. Yeah. I bet he wishes he thought of it.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
But no, it was a shocking ban from TV video. And there's some sort of thing where, in the case of the commuter train, it was a surveillance camera, and I think you can just buy the footage from whoever, whack it up. He was a student at USC at the time. I was railing about it, saying basically that I hoped his parents died in some horrible way, and somebody filmed it and then profited off it. And that
and lots of people buy it, right?
Young,
I don't even know.
Again, the people that are attracted to other people's misfortune, it's so sad to me. It says so much about you, by the way.
Yeah.
You want to fucking look in the mirror? I mean, really, you get someone goes, hey, man, did you see footage of that guy being taken apart by the Kodiak bear? And I go, no. And they go, you want to see it? I go, no. I don't want to see it. I got to beat off in 6 hours.
So that's like YouTube about these days, all these videos. There was a video of the parents found the video of their daughter who had died in a car accident on YouTube, becoming a viral video.
It's insane. I don't want to even see the woman on Oprah that got her eyes taken out by the monkey. It's like, no, I'm bummed out enough. Shit. Jesus Christ.
But then, you know, every once in a while, you do have that video where no one gets hurt.
Yeah.
Like the, I don't know, did you see the old woman driving on the wrong side of the freeway like a week ago?
Anytime where I don't care if the guy say it, if you say, look, I got a video of a guy being brutally raped by Kodiak bear, but he was fine with it. I'm in. Now I'm in. Now I can watch. But if someone was injured or especially killed, I don't want to see it.
Yeah, good, yeah. Good.
That's but that's that. Just me. Unless it involves a plane, and for some reason I'll watch it because I did see the planes going into the towers on 9/11.
Well, that was just you needed to see that.
And you saw the towers coming down.
And I saw the towers coming down too. Call me a hypocrite, crazy. But that I could not turn away from. I don't know. I felt like that was history.
Yeah.
Or something.
Yeah. See,
you needed to see it to be part of the conversation.
Ed, what do you think?
You're going to get him started. You're going to get him started on the 9/11.
Not one Jew in the building.
Okay.
What? What's going on? Conspiracy? Really?
Oh.
What's up, Ed?
Uh-oh. What do you know?
Go ahead.
No, I just believe it.
Huh.
What's the conspiracy part?
What's the conspiracy part?
Yeah, I mean that you believe in. Matt, you want to go out in the parking lot and put your head
they
under
did it
a
to go to war? Is that what you're saying?
I mean, these are all facts which are out there. If people would only take the time to stop
and listen. Let's hear it.
Rob Schneider said, Ed, I thought you'd know better. But I don't think he's examined it by any means, and so I preach it.
What? Let's hear it.
No high-rise has ever gone down by fire.
Mm-hmm.
Those buildings fell at the rate of gravity in 10 seconds flat.
So,
or close to it.
So what is the thought? Now, there were million. Now, here's Ed, as somebody who's done a little building.
I don't want to take away time.
No, this is good.
And I just want to see Matt squirm anyway. seriously, because here's how I know it to have happened. The I-beams that this thing is built of, they put fire retardant material on these I-beams. If you go into an underground parking structure and you look up, you see something that looks like it's had acoustic cottage cheese stuff blown all over it. Well, that's fire retardant because steel does melt at a fairly low temperature, and they put fire. Now, I had heard, Ed, that when the impact of the plane knocked a lot of that stuff off of these beams, and then when the Jet A fuel started burning, the beams melted. Mm-hmm. But to that, you would say what?
Bullshit.
Really? Well, then who's behind it then?
We'll never know from the type of investigation.
Who do you think is behind it?
I think that there is a certain area of government which probably participated in this.
Participated in what way? Turn a blind eye or actually participated?
Well,
I mean, in a more
proactive
way. The
couldn't have brought them down by themselves.
Bombs,
so you're
maybe?
Saying that there were explosives in the building.
Yeah. Why did Building 7 come down?
You mean the one that was not one of the World Trade?
Right. 100 yards away from the Twin Towers.
That one came down as well.
Mm-hmm.
Well, why would that one come down?
Well, I don't know.
But I mean, they put explosives in that one?
Mm-hmm.
And in that order
the,
to wage war?
That was the building that housed all of the official records. It was a 47-story building.
Mm-hmm.
And the chief of all security in the Twin Tower complex was killed, I think, in one of the Twin Towers.
Mm-hmm.
But all of the records for all of the investigative agencies were all buried and secreted in the Building 7, by the way.
But, Ed, don't you... Here's the way I feel about our government. I don't feel like they're good enough to pull this off. And I feel like they're always talking. There's somebody talking at some point. Like, I'll give you an example. You know, when we went in, when Bush said, hey, Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass destruction, and thus that is our excuse to roll in there and take that place over. And then later on, we found out, well, turns out he didn't have any of the WMDs. So why did we find out there were no weapons of mass destruction if our government is good at doing conspiracies? Wouldn't somebody said, hey, dig a hole in the desert, put a couple of barrels of mustard gas in there, and then Bush is not going to look like an asswipe, and then we're not going to look like asswipes for declaring war on a country because they had weapons of mass destruction that we never found? How could we couldn't even pull off that simple task?
Because it wasn't the same Department of Government.
Is it different?
Yeah.
The ones that aren't good at conspiracy.
That's right.
Feel, though, that somebody's going to pop up on 60 Minutes?
No, they die too easily.
Oh, really? You know,
there's one that
you got your next documentary to work on, yeah, by really. The way.
There's one that I thought was really amazing, which was the plane going in, or the so-called plane going into the Pentagon.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
You know, that if they say if you look at the video, it's not a plane. It's something else.
What is it? What do you think it is?
A missile. Possibly.
And so you're saying, Ed, that the plane hits, the tower burns, and are explosive charges set off to bring the tower down?
Yeah.
And how come watching the video, you don't seem to see any of the explosion? I mean, you see the thing pancaking on itself, but didn't see the initial explosives.
There are puffs going on. I can't tell whether the puffs are merely the decompression of each floor as it goes down or what, but there are puffs which could be the explosives.
And this is done, but to what? What's the upside of this? To be able to declare war?
This certainly helps.
But is there an easier way to do that? I mean, like I said, just plant some WMDs somewhere and gas a couple locals.
And kill 3,000 people?
Well, now I'm saying, why go...
And launch it in sufficient numbers.
I feel so, like we've started wars over less.
We have, but I think the people, in all of their stupidity, have gotten a little smarter. So you can't easily pull a Gulf of Tonkin.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
It's got to be on a bigger scale.
Vietnam.
And the lying has to be bigger. The two chiefs of the 9/11 Commission have both stated that the CIA did not completely informed them that they were denied information.
Mm-hmm.
And my bottom line in all of this is that this country, which is the greatest, strongest country that ever existed in the world in terms of power, supposedly had a defense which could not be penetrated all these years waiting for the Russians. No. But all of that was eradicated by 19 Saudi Arabians, supposedly, some of whom who didn't even know how to fly. One of the one that supposedly flew into the Pentagon did a 180-degree turn, which experienced pilots say can't be done.
Well, who's going to do then? Who's going to do the documentary on this?
Oh, well, they're not going to do any documentary.
Why not?
He wants
now,
to stay
would
alive.
You be, would there, you be scared for Matt?
There was one, actually.
Fahrenheit 9/11.
I think Charlie Sheen did one, didn't he?
No, there have been a number of documentaries.
Charlie Sheen?
Seriously.
But they haven't been done on a grand scale.
Take a break from raping hookers and really see if I can get a doc.
That's a deep one
here
for Charlie.
During my refractory period. Yeah. Now, wow.
You know,
what's Thanksgiving like at the Asner house is what I want to know.
You know,
Kennedy was shot by more than the Cubans were. Yeah, you must. And Kennedy, I shouldn't get you started on Kennedy.
I don't care.
By the way,
that one I buy into. Totally.
But they're all. Yeah. I mean, all the stuff. I mean, all the major ones.
Mm-hmm.
You're on the conspiracy side of.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay,
Bobby Kennedy, Sirhan had 7 bullets in his gun, or 8, I'm not sure which. There are 12 bullet holes in that room, with documented proof.
Now, we're on to Bobby Kennedy now. Mm-hmm. But we have footage of him being shot, right?
I don't know.
Yeah, there's footage. Yeah. Or there's, I don't know if there's footage, there's audio of him being shot.
Oh, you mean...
It goes off screen, and I think you hear it, and then...
In the, going through the kitchen.
The Ambassador Hotel.
Yeah. So you're saying... Sir, there's a conspiracy around Bobby Kennedy too.
I think so. Yeah, Paul Schrade, who was wounded and left for dead at the site, I think certainly believe.
Who would have got rid of, who wanted to get rid of Bobby Kennedy?
Well, he probably would have ceased the Vietnam War.
So this is all about the industrial war machine.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the one part of this I will agree with you on is it is a, first off, if you're manufacturing tanks and mortars and Claymore mines, you probably don't have an emotional problem with killing a person or two. Mm. It's kind of your business. I mean, people killing people is sort of your business. So at least you do have that going for you. And then the other part is, it is a massive, massive business that is either the most profitable thing in the world, or when you're not engaged in a war, that's a lot of factory space that ain't being put to use.
Mm-hmm.
That far, I definitely will go with you on. Ed, we're out of time, but again, during Thanksgiving, when I come by the Ezra house and we pick up this conversation where we left off, I will I will enjoy every second
of
Adam, it. Yes.
You know we have very smart listeners, right?
Yes.
Nothing would please me more if a listener took the best of Ed Asner's conspiracy theories from this episode and synced it up with the video of Up.
That would be a YouTube sensation.
That'd be fantastic.
Yes. I just want to close. I feel badly because I wanted Matthew to be very strongly featured.
Oh, no.
Well, man,
and I just want to tell you that the music from 100 Voices, forget the idea of cantorial, it is some of the most gorgeous music you will ever hear, and some of those gorgeous voices.
Matt and Ed Asner, is this, now would it be house or would it be tech?
Shalom Aleichem.
Ed Asner, he's got a sitcom coming up on the CMT network that begins in January, and of course Matt Asner, 100 Voices, A Journey Home, the documentary. It's coming out, is it this Friday? Did we?
This Thursday. In 100 theaters, and no pun intended. And then we open in 5 markets on the 12th.
And Ed, don't worry about Matt. He's a big boy. He comes back here all the time and plugs his stuff.
Oh, I know. But I'm so proud of what he did there.
Yeah, he chip off the old block. And next time we'll get into the Bay of Pigs with Ed Asner. So, until next time, this is Adam Carolla for Brian, Bald Brian, Shira Lazar, Matt, and his pops, Ed Asner, saying mahalo.
And now, Stitcher Radio presents your Adam Carolla Extra.
All right, Shira.
Yes.
Do you remember Shira, Lord of the Jungle?
Shira, Princess of Power.
Oh, is it Princess of Power? Well, who's the Lord of the Jungle?
I think you're showing your age difference.
What?
Either way.
She-Ra is He-Man's, like, lady, right? And She-Ra is, like, Lord of the Jungle or Queen of the Jungle or something.
Either way, I beat off to your cartoon doppelganger.
Nice.
And I just want you, I'm going to be upfront
with
you.
Hey,
it wasn't you, but it was you, you know, and if someone drew you, that's all.
As a superhero.
As a
character.
Superhero. I'm feeling, I did Jimmy Kimmel yesterday, but yesterday's
feels
today
like a long
for
time
us.
Ago, right?
So I'm wearing a makeup and feeling extra confident tonight.
The Metro and you is coming out.
Mm-hmm. Go right ahead.
Oh, we're
yeah, sorry. But no, Shira's very attractive. Very attractive. And and not
you.
in a bring home to mom kind of
oh,
way.
Oh, you're sweet.
You know, not
thank
in a
you.
Oh ditzy stripper kind of way.
I appreciate
but a substantial
that.
Kind of
you should
of
add
way.
That to my Wikipedia.
Yeah, substantial, attractive in a you can be proud of it kind
because
of way.
Because girls don't like being called cute.
Mm-mm.
But I think cute's good.
No, you're not cute. You got good bones, baby.
I appreciate that good bone structure. Speaking of good bone structure, the Biebs.
The Biebs.
Want to smell
Bieber.
Like the Biebs?
I see. Got a fucking cologne coming out.
Yes.
What? And that would smell like what? A learner's permit with its hat on
however,
sideways.
However, it's a little bit of a twist here because it's not for men. It's for the lady.
Of course.
Of course. And
but
because
the Biebs, like, when these guys come out with a book, do people, can you keep a fucking straight face? Like, when you were 16, did you have anything to say? Oh, the lessons, the love, and the loss.
It's just going to be pictures of him. You know, it's going to be a picture book.
Right.
So he already has everything. He has his biography. He has a fragrance. His agents are doing well.
Do these guys get famous because they're famous, and then it just kind of becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy and a weird sort of momentum, like some fast-moving avalanche that can't be stopped? I mean, I know I'm the guy who's always out of it, and I was out of it I'm proud to say that I've always been out of it. Like, it's not like, well, listen, old Pops Carolla, you ain't listened to Justin Bieber. No, I never bought into anything. When everyone was listening to all the shitty music of the 80s, I didn't buy into it. Even when I was the right age, I didn't buy into the bullshit.
This is like the girly pop group type thing. It's like the New Kids on the Block. For me, at least.
I'm just so tired of guys without pubes singing, girl, well, that's I want to get next to
exactly.
you.
Exactly. You listen to him singing Baby, Baby, and you're like, do you understand what you're singing about?
It's always it's been weird. That way, though. I mean, if fucking Michael Jackson, when he's 7 and a half, is like, hey, girl, if we could just get a few months, what the fuck? What are you going to do?
But he had the soul.
Pull out your miniature cock with no pubes on it and do what?
Oh, this makes it even Sorry. Better. Not only is he launching a perfume, but he's launching a range of nail polishes with colors inspired by his hit singles.
Jesus Christ. So sad.
Talk about ancillary businesses.
I know. And by the way, you know, when people go, to be fair to these kids, when people go like, what the hell's up with Joe? Why would he? Let me explain why. Somebody goes to his mom who's managing him and goes, hey, want to make a quick $1 million? All he's got to do is put his fucking name on this glittery nail polish. We'll get the fuck out of here. And, now sign here. Yeah. He does. That's why would he? Like when people say to me, why would you write a book or what? Why? You know, you're not a writer. Like I go, no, I know. It's not my idea. Somebody comes up to you and goes, hey, we'll give you money. At least this involves some work.
Yeah. And now he's just surrounded by Diddy and all these other guys. And, you know, I must say the rappers and all this, they take whatever they can get, like the endorsements. And
what
they
the
love,
fuck does
like,
Diddy do? Why don't they? Diddy doesn't do shit. He rips off other people's songs. What the fuck? It's so insane. I just got back from New York. I had to see an 80-story picture of Diddy holding his fist up, doing the 1968 Olympic thing with the black athletes on the podium doing the one fisting. He even rips off his fucking stance from shit. Everything he does is a fucking ripoff. He doesn't sing. He talks. He takes Kashmir. They play Kashmir. They play the fucking riff. They play the guitar riff from Kashmir. He talks in front of it. Then he comes out with a fucking line of cologne. What are we doing buying the fucking records? And to all you asswipes who think it's okay to sample, you're fucking high. It flies in the face of artistry. Hey, I'm going to sample some of George Carlin's jokes. Hey, why don't you sample some of Richard? No, you don't sample. It's fucking art. You can't sample. It's the antithesis of art. It's so fucking lazy. It's preposterous.
And we make it okay because we're like, oh yeah, it's a remake. It's a remix.
It's a remix. It's a whatever. No, you're taking Led Zeppelin songs and ripping them off. It's plagiarism. It's sonic plagiarism, you asswipes. If you had an ounce of fucking talent. Yeah, and then all the other cockfucks who sit around me go, sorry, but you fucking asswipes go, hey, I like this song. I kind of like
this. We groove, dude.
I like this song. It's like, yeah, you like it because...
Like, does this sound familiar?
Yeah, because Robert Plant came up with it in 1976, you fucksticks.
You realize this is exactly what I do. I take other people's words and make them new and funny.
But you're poor and bald.
So if he was making money, it would be wrong.
Yeah, so it's like Diddy with a toothpick hanging out, sunglasses. He sold. Oh, wait a minute, I like this part. Oh, yeah. Oh, Diddy out. Diddy outdid himself on this part.
He's on something here.
Yeah. Hey, I got a movie idea called Wizard of Oz. Yeah, it's
what
about Munchkins. Well, there's a song about a rainbow. And there's an evil witch and a Dorothy. She got a dog named Toto. It's awesome.
Better copyright
that
shit,
yeah, I'm
going to
write that shit down and make a million.
You're a mastermind.
Oh, Jesus Christ. And then when Biggie Smalls died, he had to come out with another fucking... It's like, quickly, I need a down-tempo morose song to rip off.
You know
off
who's the
so
dude?
Akon.
Akon is the man.
Yeah, anyone who comes up with their own shit is fine. God forbid someone play a fucking instrument, but you ripping off other people's riffs is not your song, ass fuck. It's someone else's song. And like I said... Would you use it in movies? Could you use it in art, paintings? Hey, oh God, yeah. This is you. This is that when Big Boy died, or when Biggie Smalls died.
This is a
fitting tribute. I'm gonna rip off a fucked out police song.
This is a sweet groove, though. Man.
This is a really good song.
By the way, this to me is being ripped, being raped with a double-fisted, double-ended dildo, because not only is this a horrible police song, it then turned into a horrible trilogy or eulogy for Biggie Smalls. It's so fucked out. Every breath you take, every step you make, I'll be watching. It's just a slow dirge. It's such a dirgy piece of shit.
Okay, but isn't it one of those songs... This is already over time. It's one of those songs that if you heard it today for the first time, you'd be like, wow, that's pretty awesome.
I will never give it awesome. It's just always like, all right, at least it's interesting.
But do you somebody like rap? Are you a rap something.
Type? No, sorry, not
if
this
it's
song.
New.
I mean, you know what I mean?
No.
Police
the police
song.
Version yeah. of it is too slow and too drawn out and too sort of nursery rhymey to me. But I would say at least it's original and it's interesting and it's different. I'm not going to listen to it, but it's interesting and different.
I guess the distinction is between respect and just liking a beat, right?
Yeah, just people are stupid when they hear familiar, they bite like
totally.
Fucking carp. They bite like fucking big mouth bass on something shiny. And then you just rip off a shitty nursery rhyme that the police did, but at least it's theirs. Oh fuck, this is so fucking shitty. And it's such bullshit too. All right, I'm done. We're done. I'm angry. That's it.
That was your Adam Carolla Extra on Stitcher Radio.
And that was Ed Asner and his son Matt back in 2010. Now, Brian did put out that he wanted that interview to be timed with clips from the movie Up, because Ed was such an iconic role in Up. And a listener actually did that, so it is on YouTube. So if you're bored, want to laugh, check it out. You can hear Ed Asner's crazy ramblings with some footage from Up. We love mashups. All right, this last clip. This one goes back to not as long as the other ones. 2017, just a couple years ago.
Matt Atchity, Gene Grant, Brian Bishop, episode 2113. And it turns out this is the final Rotten Tomatoes game with Matt Atchity. I don't think it was planned that way. There was planned another Rotten Tomatoes game, but he has not appeared since. So until he comes back on the show and becomes in charge of Rotten Tomatoes again, I don't think we're going to hear another game with Matt Atchity.
All right, let's do a little Rotten Tomatoes, shall we?
So it's really hot this weekend. So theme of this week's game, heat.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Hope heat's one of the choices.
Mm-hmm. Maybe. All right. First up, 1981 film, directed by Lawrence Kasdan, stars William Hurt and Kathleen Turner. William Hurt is a small-time attorney, not particularly smart, in a Florida town. Maddie, played by Kathleen Turner, is the femme fatale that kind of convinces him to kill her older husband, Richard Crenna. And things get, film noir-y. It's a mystery. It's a murder mystery. The movie is Body Heat.
Mm-hmm. I remember this being good. Critics seemed to like it. Made a splash. And
was this her first big starring role? This kind of made her a star?
Yeah, this was one of her first big roles.
I'm going to say the critics liked this one. What was there not to like? And she was great in it. 81.
Ooh. I took a chance. I said it was a little lower. I went 70.
Yeah, I don't particularly remember this, but I never heard anything bad about it. I said 83.
Body Heat is fresh at 97%.
Oh, wow.
Woo.
People had it at 80, but the critics love this one.
All right. Next up is a 1984 film about two gangster, or I'm sorry, cops, played by Clint Eastwood and Burt Reynolds. They team up in kind of Prohibition era Kansas City, if I remember correctly. The movie is City Heat.
Never heard of this.
No, I mean it seems like a movie that would be on the poster when you're making a movie about guys who made movies.
What year? 81?
84.
Oh, boy. I don't think this one did very well. And
directed by Richard Benjamin.
Interesting. Not the guy you think of when you think of these kinds of movies. Boy, but are we in the 20s or are we, 48? Can't be above 50. I'm going to say 33.
Yeah, very close. 40. I don't know anything about this movie.
Close as well. 39.
City Heat is rotten at 21%.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. All right. Well, no one's doing well, but I'm doing the best of the least.
All right. Next film. Arnold Schwarzenegger plays a stern law enforcement officer from Russia. James Belushi is a smart mouth Chicago cop. They team up in Red Heat.
I don't remember this either. What year is this?
1988. This was the first and maybe only movie to really give Schwarzenegger a reason to have an accent.
Yeah.
I'm loving the billing. Schwarzenegger, Red Heat. And if you look way at the bottom, Belushi.
Belushi.
Yeah. And they left the first name off because it might, get a little more traction.
So Walter Hill directed this, who also worked on 48 Hours.
All right. Well, that's good. So that means could have been something. I'm going to say Belushi was great in Salvador. Remember that? With James Woods.
Oh, yeah.
Oliver Stone? Do you write that?
Belushi was really good in that. Like, you tend to have a knee jerk with him. Like, oh, come on. But About Last Night he was good in.
Yeah.
He was good in Salvador. Which is a very interesting movie.
Salvador is like City Heat for me. Like, I know that I've seen it, but it's been so long that all I can remember is I've actually seen it.
It's good. I mean, Woods is good in it. All right. Boy, who knows?
I really don't.
It could be, 35, or it could surprise you at 71.
I couldn't even tell you if it's good or not.
I'm going to say 57.
Ooh.
I don't feel like it's one of his being Schwarzenegger's more celebrated movies. It never comes up, so I'm going to say 40.
Yeah, judging by the poster alone, I'm going 33.
Red Heat is fresh at 62%.
Ooh.
Good night.
Pretty brutal right there.
People hated it.
Yeah, 37 with people. Now, it's weird that a movie like this kind of broad thing with the shoot 'em up thing, is 37 with people and 62 with the critics. You'll almost never see that. All right.
Next up, in 1995, we got the first on-screen pairing between two legends, Al Pacino and Robert De Niro. Val Kilmer's also in this, about a hard-nosed cop taking on professional thieves in Los Angeles. The movie is Heat.
This was a real good movie because it showed sort of criminals as business people and a little less of just these sort of gangsters who are always dressed in black,
Or it doesn't show them as like a criminal, insane masterminds. This is their job. They have a process and they steal money.
Right. Like the guys that are insane, they're like, oh, we can't work with him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. That's the guy they try to take out.
Yeah, it makes it much more interesting when the heavy has the nuance and you realize he's not. Because it's that sort of, the villain's got to kick the cat for no reason. Like, he has to be bad, but they're not bad to their kids. They're not bad to even their neighbors. Mm-hmm. They're just bad to whoever happens to be in the bank.
Yep. Great, great, great cast. Deep cast, too. Just beyond the stars. Yeah. This cast goes on forever.
All right. So now we know it's got to be 85 plus. The real question is do we shoot for 97 or do we go 89?
Playing safe.
I'm protecting a lead here at this point. I'm going to go 90.
I love this movie. I own this movie. I hope I get it right. 93.
Ooh, I went low, 89.
Heat is certified fresh at 86%.
Ooh.
Love this movie.
All right, lastly, I really wanted to use The Heat, but we did that a couple years ago, so couldn't use it again. So instead, we're going to go with a 2001 comedy set at Camp Firewood with a cast of very popular comics at the time: Jeanine Garofalo, David Hyde Pierce, Michael Showalter, Paul Rudd. Bradley Cooper is also in this. The movie is Wet Hot American Summer.
I was really hoping for Windy City.
This is one of those movies that got cool or was cool, but I don't, it's sort of, I don't know. It's like everyone liked Meatballs, but Meatballs wasn't very good or very funny. It was like, it was okay.
Well, yeah. They did make a TV show off of it, and I think they're doing another one.
Yeah, I don't know where there's certain movies that capture certain whatever, especially in the comedy realm, where you go, oh, we got to like that movie. Otherwise, you're not hip or cool or whatever. And this one captured the, if you don't like this, then you don't, you're basically saying, I don't know what comedy is.
Yeah, I didn't see this till a few years after it was released. And by that point, it was a thing. I was like, oh, you got to see it. You got to see it. I just didn't, I didn't respond to it the way other people did.
Well, because it's not that funny, but it's not unfunny. It just joins the ranks of many movies that aren't really that funny, but some get anointed, like, you know, they become this weird kind of
Caddyshack.
Yeah, Caddyshack's like overrated, but it
Vacation. The stupid beer, Strange Brew.
Yeah, stuff like that. Like, although that's not quite like the cool kids. It's somehow,
but it's a cult thing. It being a life of its own. Basically,
all right. So now this has got to be the worst movie ever for me because I got a nice fat lead here. Mm-hmm. And this movie in my world is 47%, maybe it's 57%, but the critics could have gone nuts for this. Mm-hmm. The critics should have this thing at 89 or something, and I could be off by 40. I'm going to
go with your head, not your heart.
Was it too silly all around?
I think the critics somehow this became a darling, even if there wasn't a lot there. I think a pretty good lead to protect, and for that reason, I got to go 65.
Oh, I went much higher. I said 85.
Oh, see, I thought the premise was great, but I did stay safe. I went 72.
You protected your lead, Adam. Wet Hot American Summer is rotten.
No!
Whoa!
At 32%.
I am really, really shocked.
That's crazy.
Where'd all the buzz come from?
Well, the audience is 76.
Yeah. Even that, that's good, but it's not, you know.
Off the charts.
Yeah. I mean.
Wow, it wasn't 32.
Wow, that was a 53-point error by me.
Yeah, I'll just go home now.
I might be in triple digits.
It's not even close. But I will say that this game has a nice silver lining. The highest score,
by a long shot,
belongs to Bald Brian. 128, leaving Gina and Adam. Adam, you said you were playing to protect your lead, and protect it you did by 34 points, beating Gina Grad out. Gina had a score of 104. You win the game with 70.
Wow. Well done.
Gina's score. The temperature outside.
Exactly. It is. Rotten or fresh.
RottenTomatoes.com is where you can go. And now features tomato meters for TV shows. And I love seeing it pop up when I'm scrolling through the cable selections.
Oh, I was watching last night. I was watching Groundhog Day with Chrissy. She had never seen it, so I decided tonight we're watching Groundhog Day. 97% on the old TV screen there. It just popped up, told you what it was.
RottenTomatoes.com is where you go.
And that was then editor-in-chief of Rotten Tomatoes, Matt Achety, doing his most recent Rotten Tomatoes game back in 2017. All right, that'll do it for Corolla Classics on this lovely Saturday for your holiday weekend. We'll see you tomorrow, though. So till then, my name's Chris Loxamana. That's Super Fan Giovanni.
Mahalo and get on.